Good morning and welcome to the August 15th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for participating and remind you to silence any electronic devices that you have with you today. For those attending electronically, please mute your screens. Today's meeting is a study and business session with study session starting this morning at 10 a.m. and the afternoon business session scheduled to begin at 1 p.m. We have a busy agenda today, so we're going to be moving right along to get everything in. Excuse me. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each item is presented. If you wish to provide additional comment or ask questions related to matters not on the agenda, time will be provided in the business session this afternoon during the business session of our meeting. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand, either physically or electronically, signaling to me that you wish to speak. If I do not see you, speak and let us know that you're trying to get my attention. When I recognize you, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have four commissioners present, and Ann Congdon is absent today, and what's the word I use there? With permission. Excused. I mean, she's excused. Thank you. Today we have Manager Kirk Hudson, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and Rebecca Newman, Clerk of the Board. Please join Tika Sellers today. Welcome, Tika, in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minute.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. Tika Sellers, Customer Outreach Specialist with Customer Utilities. It has been a minute since I have done a safety minute. So bear with me. We'll watch this video in just a second, but I have my older child starting kindergarten in a couple of weeks, so big milestone in our family, and it made me think about being safe on the roads as drivers as kids are going back to school. So school days bring congestion, school buses are picking up their passengers, kids on bikes are hurrying to get to school before the bell rings, harried parents are trying to drop their kids off before work. Never more important for drivers to slow down and pay attention than when kids are present, especially before and after school. So if you happen to be dropping a kid off, make sure that you're following all of the drop-off procedures. Make sure you know them for the safety of all kids. Don't forget to share the road with young pedestrians. Don't block the crosswalk. In a school zone, when flashers are blinking, stop and yield to pedestrians crossing the crosswalk. Always stop for school patrol officers or crossing guards. Never pass a vehicle that's stopped for pedestrians. Sharing the road with school buses, if you're driving behind a bus, allow greater following distance than if you were driving behind a car. It is illegal in all 50 states to pass a school bus that is stopped to load or unload children. The area 10 feet around a school bus is the most dangerous for children. Stop far enough back to allow them space to safely enter and exit the bus, and be alert. Lastly, sharing the road with bicycles. So on most roads, bicyclists have the same rights and responsibilities as vehicles, but bikes can be hard to see. Children riding bikes create special problems for drivers because usually they're not able to properly determine traffic conditions. The most common cause of a collision is a driver turning left in front of a bicyclist. So when passing a bicyclist, proceed in the same direction slowly and leave 3 feet behind your car and the cyclist. When turning left, and a bicyclist is approaching in the opposite direction, wait for the rider to pass. If you're turning right and a bicyclist is approaching from behind on the right, let the rider go through the intersection first and always use your turn signals. Be extra vigilant in school zones and residential neighborhoods. And by exercising a little extra care and caution, drivers and pedestrians can coexist safely in school zones. So I learned something while I was getting ready for this. It's called the far hand reach. I'll let you watch the video because I would have not known what this meant. Okay, so the next time you park on a street, I expect you to open the car door with your far hand. It's a, It's a very simple thing I would have never thought about. I do catch myself parked out here on the road every once in a while, and that's a really simple thing to remember. So anyways, be careful as kids are going back to school. I cannot believe, I think when I was in school, didn't we wait until after summer was over to start school? But nonetheless, parent-teacher conferences start next week. So be careful with those kids. Thanks.
Thank you, Tika.
Thank you.
Great information. Learned something today.
And in case you're interested, that all came from the National Safety Council website.
All right. Thank you very much.
Tika, Dennis. It's just hard for me to believe your daughter is starting school. I remember when you would skate with her in your arms when she was an infant, and that seems like yesterday. So thanks for sharing that.
All right. It's just hard to believe we're getting ready for school to begin. And I had a house full of grandkids and nephews and great nieces and nephews, and they're all getting, you know, listening to them talk about getting ready for school. It's just hard to believe. So anyway, great information today, Tika.
Yeah, Steve, I don't know if you had the experience, but I used to have a night before school nightmare every year and that I couldn't find my class and I couldn't get there on time. And I still have that stinky nightmare, and I've been retired for a long time.
All right. Well, it's nice that my anxiety has been very low as school gets started these days. So, watching my sons and get their school ready, it's a nice change for me. Okay. So, commissioners, staff are recommending that we move Resolution 13 to the consent agenda. Additionally, for our public's information, items on the consent agenda as listed are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. So, commissioners, do I hear any requests or additions to the agenda, including knowing that it's been suggested we move 13 to the consent agenda? Hearing none, the agenda stands. It is revised. All right. So, Kirk, let's approve the agenda. Number three, let's move to the CPO winner.
Yeah. I'd like to call Bob Bauer up. Bob, as he's coming up, Bob is being recognized as the July Cycle of Personal Ownership Award winner for the district. And I know you all know Bob, and I know that this is not a surprise to you. Bob does a fantastic job representing the district and educating regionally about hydropower. And this particular nomination came in for his work on the STEM Career Academy, which was conducted at Rocky Reach Dam on June 20th. And this event was in coordination with Grant PUD and Foundation for Water, Energy, and Environment, FWE, that's how we call it.
Say that again.
FWE.
FWE.
Yeah. Foundation, Water, Energy, and Environment. Is that right, Bob?
Foundation for Water and Energy Education.
Education. Yep. Yeah. So they're a great partner. They really are. Bob was nominated for his work on this event. I got to go out and actually participate in the commencement address. So this is a week-long program for high school age students. So they spent, it was almost their first week out of school, if I'm not mistaken, shortly after they got out of school. And I know that was part of my message when I shared with them at the graduation was I thought it was kudos to them for just being done with school and then spending a week right afterwards in another education program. So it was great. Bob gave probably one of the most compelling commencement addresses that I've seen and been part of. Just did a phenomenal job, not just talking about what they learned during the week, but the connections they made with each other and the people that were there as our partners, including Bob. So just congratulations, Bob. Thanks once again for a job well done.
Thank you, Kirk. So I wanted to be here today to share this award with all those who made it possible. So I'm kind of the glue that pulls this thing together, but all of the different departments that support us. This year it was our fish biologists, it was our project managers, it was our construction managers, it was our cyber security guy, Daniel Hypes, was out there. We had a line crew out there that put spikes on every single student so they could climb the power poles. That particular evening, I thought they would be done by about 5 o'clock, and at 6:15, we had one young gal who just had to get up that pole, and they worked with her and worked with her and were so patient and kind, and she got up the pole. So anyway, the reason I really wanted to be here today was to share this CPO recognition with all those who really make it happen. And then I just wanted to share a second thing. Just because it's from my heart, I've been here 21 years at Chelan County PUD, and the position I started in is the position I plan to retire in. I never had a motive to move on or climb the ladder because I fell in love with what I do. And so I've had the privilege of serving in the United States Air Force, one of the greatest meritocracies I think the world's ever known. Everybody's treated equal, lots of integrity. Ethics, moral standards. I was a trooper with the Wyoming Highway Patrol. High moral standards, high ethical standards, and just an incredible organization. I worked for Douglas County District Court as a probation officer, and I also worked for the Washington State Park Department. But I want to say to you, after all of those experiences, the greatest, and I do mean this from my heart, the greatest career blessing I've ever experienced was the day that I came on board at Chelan County PUD. Over 21 years, I've watched an organization develop and continually improve upon its professionalism. I think you commissioners have made some incredibly good choices, and I preempted what I'm saying right now by saying I plan to retire in the position I came in. I'm not here to seek any upscale promotion, nothing like that. I'm going to leave the way I came, but I mean what I say. Our senior management team is awesome. I find them to be very approachable. They listen. I've just had an incredibly wonderful experience at Chelan County PUD. So when I go out into the high schools and I talk about our aging workforce and I try to convince kids to take math, 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 and do science, 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 and physics, 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 I do that because I know that they've got an opportunity to work for a great organization. So it's very easy for me. I say this humbly, it's easy for me to excel at what I do because I believe in the place that I work. So I wanted to share that with you, and I wanted to say thank you for the recognition. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, Bob. Hey, stay right there.
Well, Kristen started this whole thing.
Good try trying to escape quickly, but Randy?
So, Bob, I want to correct something. First, you can never retire.
I have three grandbabies. It won't be a true retirement.
Second, when Kirk introduced you, you know, he talked about your impact locally and regionally. You've touched on the fact that you were in the Air Force. You brought that into bear early on in your career here with one of the first groups I brought from Kyrgyzstan to Rocky Reach Dam, and you blew them away internationally on your knowledge of their hydroelectric projects in Kyrgyzstan. And so you've been an international ambassador as well as local and regional. And I know that it helps that you're a part-time minister. Your gift of gab is just great, and we all love it, and we never want you to stop talking. I mean, that's, you know, because when you speak, you think it out. I mean, it's amazing what you can do, and we all love you, Bob. So thank you for what you do.
Very mutual. Very mutual.
So I'm going to tell a little story, Bob. As a new commissioner coming onto the commission, one of my first activities was to go out to the Lake Chelan Hydro and watch the school kids come to the park and go through lessons. And that's where I first met you, I believe. And I didn't know you, but I got to watch you lead hundreds of kids and teachers. And I thought, whoa, this guy's a teacher. You know, I mean, just your command and your presence and excitement for learning was incredible. And that's what makes great teachers. Their love of the material and their passion and being able to share that with kids and other teachers. So congratulations on this award, and it's great to see you continuing that work year after year. And that's impressive, and you're always going to cherish those memories. So.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
If I may, now, please.
Dennis, you got Dennis?
Yeah. Bob, I don't know if you are aware, but you probably are, but kind of behind the scenes, you're known as the Energizer Bunny. Everyone appreciates your energy and your enthusiasm. The love of what you do is evident from the moment you meet anyone. And, you know, we've had a lot of, you know, over the years, great conversations and exchanges. I will say it's been an absolute pleasure to work with you and to observe what you do and how you do it. And you have left a mark on so many people in so many different ways. And your personal generosity may be your greatest quality. You know, Will Rogers one time made the comment that he never met a person he didn't like. And I believe that about you as well. So, you know, whenever you make that decision, going to wish you well and going to miss you in your position whenever that occurs. And you're welcome to remain there as long as possible. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis.
And the retirement's not scheduled or anything like that.
Is this an announcement or something?
Yeah, no, I'm still loving what I'm doing.
Okay, good. Good. Thank you, Bob. Thanks
thank you so being... much, everybody.
Bob.
Oh, we got Bob, Gary.
You know, I just have to say, everything's already been said. And I can't say a whole lot more than what has been said. You are a wonderful ambassador for the Chelan PUD. And I can't even tell you how many times that I've spoken with people, whether it's at the grocery store or whether it's at the park or even out at the dam. And mothers have come up to me and said, that Bob guy, I don't know his last name, but that Bob guy, he's great. You should keep him around for a long time. We really like him. So you have in your ways ingrained yourself within the organization. So I'm glad to hear that retirement is not anywhere near. We don't want that to happen. But just be aware of the fact that you are now synonymous with the name Chelan County PUD. When people think of the PUD, they're thinking of you. So thank you. Thank you for being such an ambassador in our community.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
Great organization. You guys are doing great work. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay. Let's move on to the quarterly financial review and investment report with Mark and Dave.
And Heather.
And Heather. Heather, do you want a chair?
All right, very good. Thank you very much. And Mark Mullins, Director of Planning, Director of Carl, over again. Mark Mullins, Enterprise Planning, Risk, and Analytics. And to my right is Dave Nelson, Manager over Strategic Financial Planning, and Heather Ireland, our Director over Treasury. Today we're going to run through the financial update relatively quickly, so we'll get through this efficiently given the amount of time that we have today. So today we'll be presenting the quarter end Q2, June 30th, 2022, quarterly financial review. Starting with formalities, the presentation does support a number of resolutions that require quarterly reporting to the board on compliance with their long-range financial policies, business line financial policies, investment policy, as well as the board's balanced scorecard objective of maintaining strong financial stewardship. So with that, today we're going to cover our financial highlights, second quarter results, five-year look ahead, our investment report, and I'll leave you with some key messages. There's information in the back in the appendix, but we won't cover that today. This is an update only, no action required. So our Q2 2022 key highlights, bottom line results for Q2 are better than budget. Lower operating costs and higher revenue, primarily due to the retained surplus proceeds from a cost-based contract, are contributing to those results. From a forecast perspective, also better than budget. Higher operating revenues are expected to continue to grow for the year. Throughout the remainder of the year, O&M projects are going to continue to spend pretty heavily, as well as our capital plan as well. We do have significant projects that are underway. And the inflation impacts are continuing to be manageable. We do monitor that and evaluate that on a regular basis, particularly now. And we will revisit that again through the budgeting process as we get here towards the fall through the end of the year. Our financial metrics are meeting our targets. We do plan on borrowing roughly around 2023 to continue supporting our strong financial plan at this time, staying the course with our 2020 through 2024 strategic objective, or strategic plan. So looking at the overview, service revenue is below budget slightly, primarily due to usage with the off-system induced sale and also HDL load growth continuing to lag. On a net wholesale revenue perspective, higher stream flows leading to higher energy production, as well as higher market prices. That the combination of those items contributes to a higher benefit above budget. Hydro contract revenue, $9 million above budget year to date, primarily due to the surplus proceeds that I mentioned earlier on our cost-based contract. We've retained through Q2, $16 million, and that's partially offset by our lower production costs with lower spending on our hydro O&M. Other operating revenue, $3 million below budget, above budget, due to the variable portion of our real-time agreement. And total revenues, as mentioned, continuing to be forecasted above budget for the year. From an expense standpoint, O&M at the hydros continue to be lagging. We are planning on catching up through the remainder of the year. And our non-op net expense, $1 million better than budget, with customer line extension contributions being contributed there. Overall, as mentioned, total net expenses expected to be below budget for the year, which is a benefit to our bottom line. And from a bottom line perspective, year to date, $63 million, $32 million better than budget, primarily due to the higher revenues and lower expenditures. From a forecast perspective, $95 million based on our Q2 assumptions, $33 million better than budget. So looking at it from a capital perspective, year-to-date, spending $52 million. This is below budget. We do have a number of projects as listed here. I won't go through those in detail. Primarily, from a magnitude perspective, the operations and service center, we're deferring some of that spending out to 2023. And then we've also added the substation to serve Microsoft that's included in here as a recent item that we've added. From a capital perspective, forecasting to spend $169 million, but remaining below budget for the year. From a cash perspective, increased by $22 million from year end. We do have our positive bottom line and a prepayment from Microsoft that is contributing to that, as well as continuing to draw down our cash with our capital spending program. Year end balance forecasted at $443, $86 million better than budget. From a debt perspective, continue to implement our plan of finance for 2022 and forecasted to end the year at $349 million, down $47 million from where we were at in 2021 at year end. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dave.
Morning, commissioners. We were told to go quickly. I think that might have been a speed record for Mark.
Yeah, for Mark.
So we'll check with Rebecca later to get the timing on that. This table brings the bottom line forecast together for 2022. The information Mark talked about, better wholesale revenues, long-term contract revenues, other operating revenues, very strong revenues overall forecasted for the year, and lower operating expenses, resulting in the bottom line of the $95 million, $33 million better than budget, what we're forecasting at this point. Looking at it from a business line perspective, Integrated Electric mirrors the overall combined district results. Fiber and Telecom, slightly below budget due to some lower revenues with some rate changes. Water, slightly better than budget due to lower operating expenses and customer contributions for connections. Wastewater, slightly better than budget due to lower operating expenses. Inter-system eliminations is due to the fiber distribution make-ready work. Overall, showing the bottom line of the $95 million projected. The capital expenditures side, overall, we're at 73% year-to-date of budget. Primary drivers from a dollar standpoint of being below budget is Rock Island, with some of our modernization programs being behind schedule this year, and also the service center and the internal services being behind schedule, pushing out into next year. Overall, for the year, we're projecting to be at 84% of budget, and you can see a number of areas below budget there. Rocky Reach is projected to be at 56% due to revised schedules for electrical upgrades and tail race gantry crane moving out into future years. Rock Island at 87% of budget, due to a number of projects, including the powerhouse modernizations, the intake gantry crane schedule revisions. Fiber and Telecom forecasting at 66% due to some revised schedules for PPV expansion. Chelan Hydro had a couple of larger projects that moved out into future years, the auto closure gate and the spill gate automation, and internal services, I mentioned the service center delays. Overall, projecting $169 million against the budget of $200 million for the year. Running through our cash flow year-to-date, we had $63 million in bottom-line results. We add back our non-cash expense items, depreciation and amortization, $26 million, subtract some non-cash revenue items, $7 million, resulting in $82 million in earned funds from operations. We had capital project expenditures of $52 million, net debt activity, principal payments, net of some capitalized interest of $19 million. We had the customer deposit, $43 million, other balance sheet changes, reduction of $32 million, and so an estimated use of funds of $60 million overall, use added to cash reserves of $22 million, going from $508 at the beginning of the year to $530 at the end of the year, or at the middle, sorry, at the end of June. So breaking down where those cash are invested, we have unrestricted funds of $341 million. That number is up from year-end, as we've been using some more of the restricted funds to fund our capital programs. We have started to use the Headquarters Service Center Strategic Fund and used $10 million of that fund. We anticipate using the balance of that over 2022 and 2023 as the service center is completed. As I mentioned, we've been using some of the restricted funds for hydro capital and bond reserve funds in our projects. Note the customer deposit for Microsoft in the restricted category of $43 million used for that project. So overall, $530 million cash balance. Looking looking at our financial policies, as Mark mentioned, we're in compliance with all of those, forecasting to stay to meet our metrics. Would note the days cash on hand is showing as yellow, meaning it's within 10% of our metric, as we anticipate spending down some of our excess cash on capital projects and debt reduction.
Question on that, Dave. The cash on hand, is that predicated on no borrowing, if that is without borrowing?
This is actually, what we do is we forecast the borrowing that would be required to maintain that capital require, or that target requirement. So we are forecasting a small amount of borrowing, about $75 million over the next 5 years. Okay. I think as Kelly mentioned in the last quarterly report, when we do go out to borrow, we would probably look to borrow differently than what we're forecasting. We just forecast it as needed throughout the years. We would probably borrow in a larger lump, amount, and use that over the next year. You can see at the bottom, just to tie to that, you can see the debt outstanding we are projecting that we'd continue to reduce debt over this planning period, the next 5 years. But that does include some projected borrowings. Looking at the quarterly reporting requirements for the individual lines, business lines, the results are mixed here. We're continuing to work on planning to correct these or work on improving these metrics. Would note the operating cover percentages for water and wastewater have dipped into the red now due to increased O&M expense forecasts. Why those have declined slightly. And again, these are the forecasts for 2024, which were the targeted dates in our plan. Turn it over to Heather for quarterly investment report.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm happy to be here this morning to share an update on our quarterly investment report. We are meeting all of our policy and compliance requirements for the quarter, on an average invested book value of just over $500 million for Q2. Our district yield did increase to 2.21% for the quarter, which does compare favorably to our benchmarks. And just a couple of drivers of that increase. As you can see in the quarters prior, there are slight increases and declines each quarter. And one of the reasons for that is that we do have an investment agreement associated with certain bond reserves that does not earn investment income evenly over all time periods. Over time, it will average out to a guaranteed rate of return, but it does come in at different timings throughout the year. And because of that, it does cause some increases and decreases each quarter in our return. So in Q2, we had a slightly higher rate of return on that investment agreement, which pushed our overall yield up slightly. Another driver with our increase in yield was also increasing market interest rates. We have seen increasing rates, especially in short-term investments, and that is driving our yield slightly higher. We do anticipate those short-term rates specifically to continue to increase over the remainder of the year as actions by the Federal Open Market Committee are working towards raising the targeted federal funds rate. The targeted federal funds rate does tend to increase short-term rates across the board. We're continuing to plan for our laddered investment structure, which we believe is the best strategy to ensure safety of principal and liquidity when the district needs it, as well as mitigating interest rate risk and volatility. We do plan to have slightly higher short-term cash balances over the next few months as we plan for meeting liquidity needs of our capital project plans. Additionally, for our quarterly investment report, a new addition this quarter is in April, the board did adopt a refined banking and investment policy. And under that new process, the treasurer, myself, with the concurrence of our CFO, can make changes to our signers to our banking and investment accounts for improved efficiency and to ensure the security of signer information. So wanted to report back to the board that we did implement that process this quarter, and we did have some changes in our signers to address staffing changes in treasury, finance, human resources, and internal audit. The full quarterly investment report is available in the appendix with additional information as well. The other item that I'm very happy to be here to share this morning with the commission and the public is to celebrate for a moment in regards to some recent news that the district did receive an upgrade to our credit rating from Moody's Investor Services. The decision was to upgrade the district's credit rating to a AA2 with a continuing stable outlook. They did cite a few drivers for that decision, which included new long-term power sales contracts, which increased the duration of our hedging portfolio. They also cited the continuing demonstration of conservative risk management here at the district and our significant debt reduction since 2009, which has produced strong financials. This process, really, there needs to be a lot of thanks at the board level for your commitment to setting policies that provide long-term stability for the district. That has been a key reason for this upgrade, and credit really goes to the entire organization at the district. The efforts that everybody has put forth to achieve these results are fairly substantial. Everybody's day-to-day work leads to the results that we see, which is what helps Moody's made that decision to upgrade our credit rating to that AA2 level. We also continue to maintain AA+ credit ratings from both Fitch and S&P, which does continue to put the district among the top-rated utilities in the nation. It's quite the accomplishment. So I wanted to offer my thanks for the board for their commitment, as well as the entire organization for their efforts.
So, Heather, I'm sure you've been too busy to check, but how many utilities are ranked higher than us in the nation?
I don't know if I have the whole count, and I can't say ranked higher, but we are in within probably 5 to 10, no more than 5 to 10, that are rated at these type of levels.
Out of literally thousands of utilities.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Finance gets to be the communicator of the good information.
And we could joke around and say it has something to do with your stepping into your role and taking credit, but I appreciate you spreading that evenly over the entire organization.
I am taking full credit when I communicate with the former treasurer.
Yeah.
Yes. Well,
really, congratulations on that. We really appreciate that. And that's big news. And so, great.
Yeah, it is great news. It has really been a decade of effort.
Yes.
So we are very, very excited for this.
We realize that, and that's a big deal to us. So thank you very much. Okay, I'm just looking for...
Just have one last...
Go ahead, Mark. Go.
Slide, just the key messages to wrap up our presentation. Obviously, very good results year-to-date, better than budget. Long-term metrics looking very strong. We do anticipate borrowing in the next 5-year planning horizon, but we recommend staying the course with our 2020 to 24 strategic plan.
Great. I think personally one of the things that would help me is you can keep, so I don't need anything right now, but just I'm always curious as I look at restricted and unrestricted reserve funds, and I look at how we're paying debt down, and with the idea of going out and borrowing again, and with the possibility of interest rates going up, how that balance works out to determine how much and when and how you borrow, and do you not pay some debt off and use those funds to not borrow. But I know it's healthy for us to, as part of that big plan, to borrow. It is a good function. So anyway, I appreciate as you continue to educate us and keep us informed. That's a curiosity that I continue to have. Okay. Commissioners, do I have any questions or other comments? Well, again, congratulations to everybody in the organization on the upgrade of the credit rating. It's a big deal. I wanted to say woohoo and
yeah.
Attaboys, and Dennis is clapping his hands and Gary's shaking his head yes, so we're just delighted for the organization. So thank you very much for the great information, and areas not only that we're doing well, but areas that we're working on to improve. So great job. Thanks for being here today.
Next item on our study session agenda is the quarterly energy resources update, and with us is Sean Smith and Janet Jaspers.
Good morning, commissioners and the public. Sean Smith here, Managing Director of Energy Resources.
I'm Janet Jaspers, Director of Energy Planning and Trading.
Go to the next slide. Oh, I can do it. So today we're going to cover the second quarter wholesale revenue forecast update. We're going to look at the Western markets, little update there, and then also a portfolio overview with a pricing update. Some of the highlights we'll go through is that we have revenue of $72 million, the forecast now, which is $8 million better than the budget. And also, when we add in other energy-related items, we're $27 million better than budget. So putting that revenue forecast now up to $135 million. The resource adequacy program continues to advance. And then also in Western markets, both the California ISO and the Southwestern will continue to progress on their day-ahead market governance and implementation process. So as I look through, I'm going to focus now here on revenues. And you'll see here this is more of a combined chart, and it overall reflects the forecast picture better. And what we look at is you'll see the green line is when we had the budget numbers for energy, and then the red line is from our last quarterly update. And see, everything is slightly above that. Prices have continued to increase. And then also this year we had some additional water that helped that those items. So overall, very good picture going out into the long term. When I delve a little more into the items, what we really focus here on is the energy sales have gone up by $8 million from budget. Those are the big ones. And then our long-term contract, the retained surplus, you'll see the $16 million number there on the right, and then a little additional real-time revenue of $2 million. So that adds up to close to $30 million from a budget. So those three items are the key drivers to a better financial picture. All good here. Well, we're all within the hedging limit, so you'll see the red line, and everything is below that. So nothing to report here except that everything is in compliance with our hedging policy. Nothing also on fixed price slice contracts from our last quarterly update. Everything is, nothing has changed, although we continue to progress through different potential parties. Now, some major changes here with Western Power Markets, Western Resource Adequacy Program. They've moved out their binding program start date now to 2025. It's taking a little longer. It's a lot of, as you can see, a lot of entities there working through the process of filing the tariff with the FERC, the instructions how to process. And we should note here, for the district, there is a potential to limit our long-term contracting by 10% because of our high winter peak. We average about 220 average megawatts throughout the year, but in the winter, our peak goes up to close to 500 megawatts. And we would have to reserve that without mitigations and potentially cut into our long-term contracting by 10%. Although we've got plenty of years to solve this issue, but just wanted to bring that to the board as a potential concern of the RAP program. In short-term markets, which is real-time and day-ahead, we recently joined the Western Markets Exploratory Group, And what that is a group of entities throughout the Western U.S., and we're exploring markets, and they're going to run analysis for us to make sure our decisions are correct moving forward. Right now, we're focusing on the CAISO EDAM, which is aiming to go live in 2024, and SPP Markets Plus, which is a competitor to that. And they're going to have in the first quarter of 2023, they're going to look for commitments to fund their next phase, where they'll go through development of their tariff and their market design. So another note for the district here is, you know, we have to follow both programs, and we're going to have to prepare for day-ahead markets, just in case the liquidity at the Mid-Sea dried up or it was economically viable for us to join. It came out better that we would join one of these day-ahead markets. So we're attending plenty of meetings on all of these items. Next slide. Oop, that's me. And I'm going to pass this off to Janet.
Thanks, John. So where is our tracking natural gas? It's really the marginal fuel for wholesale prices. We have a couple of different natural gas hubs here. The red line is Sumas, which is closest to us here at Mid-Sea. You can see it's kind of tracking a little bit lower lately than the rest of the hubs. It's just because the Northwest had a really high hydro year this year. The highest is PG&E City Gate. Lots of demand there. Last time we were here, for a September contract for MMBTU is $8.41. Really not much change for this update, but we did have a pretty big drop in prices. Back here on June 8th, there was the explosion at a Freeport liquid natural gas facility. And so some of the natural gas that was being exported in LNG to the European nations couldn't get out. So the natural gas was really stranded in the continental U.S. So demand really dropped, and you can see price dropped probably about $3 per MMBTU. Since then, we've seen quite a bit of heat during the summer, so a lot more demand. And then the Freeport plant said that they might be back online sometime like 90 to 120 days, so later in 2022. So that demand really rebounded. And so that last chart was just this yellow rectangle down here on the right of the time scale. So looking back at 2005 and 2008, we saw spikes quite a bit higher, $14 per MMBTU compared to where we're at right now. Taking a look at the Mid-Sea forward price curve out for this year going out to 2027. At budget time for 2022, we had $55.97 average per megawatt hour. Currently, we have $61.69 average, which is close to a $6 increase. Kind of wild. So January, we had quite a bit lower prices than budget. Q3, we had a higher. And it's really dropped since last time we were here. We're in the black line right now. But what's kind of interesting to see is from last time we were here to this time, just a quarter ago, the black line and the blue line are virtually on top of each other. So not much change in prices overall since we were last here. Take a look at the Lake Chelan Lake Level webpage and chart. And so we're nearing the end of our kind of annual operating cycle. I think what's new since last time we were here, we did come in just above the July 1st and August 1st targets. The orange, the small orange band, is our current operating band that we plan to stay within. So pretty tight band. for the next couple months before we start the drawdown this fall.
Yep. And so for just wanted to sum up everything here, you know, everything looks very good. We're our net wholesale revenue is $72 million, which is $8 million better than budget. If you add in the other energy-related items, you get $27 million better than budget for a total of $135 million. Then in the Western Resource Adequacy Program, it continues to work towards finalization, but it could impact our long-term contracting and without some mitigations, but we're working on that. And finally, the Western markets continue to progress, both CAISO and SPP, as we follow those. And we may need to decide on joining one of those markets based on economics or liquidity at the Mid-Sea. And with that, I'll open it up for questions.
One question here. You made the comment on the new rules may limit our ability to sell into the future based on our peak need.
Yes.
So that power would then be reserved and have to be on the daily market?
Yeah, it would be dumped into the day-ahead market. Correct, Randy?
That's a lot of electricity.
Yes, that's a lot of electricity, and why we're working hard to find mitigations for that.
Well, good.
Commissioners, any other questions?
Just as a reminder, too, that Western Resource Adequacy Program is also a voluntary program, mm-hmm. and it's one we're choosing to volunteer for at this point in time to make sure the Northwest has the adequate supplies, energy, and capacity. A number of others are voluntarily participating as well, and then there will become a point which is when it becomes binding.
Yeah, in the 2025 region. Yeah. We'll have to make a decision, obviously, before that, but we would obviously come to the board about that.
But literally all of the Northwest utilities are winter peaking utilities.
No, the ones on the coast are more double peaking. So
I think even Grand County PUC, with all of their irrigation load, I'm pretty sure there are some.
They are. Workers. Yeah, they are.
Yeah, so there is the opportunity to work.
Opportunity.
Yeah.
Yep.
To mitigate between, you know, if you exchange with a summer peaking and more winter peaking. So, right. In general, summer peaking it's more valuable for us to be long in the summer overall the market.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Gary, did you have something? Or are you? He was off the mute.
I just had a question. Sean, can you remind me, SPP, what does that stand for?
Southwest Power Pool.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. They're headquartered in Arkansas, and then they move up from their states are mainly sort of above Texas as you go straight up the Midwest, and then they've started their real-time market has started to inch into places like Colorado. And they're expanding and looking to expand here also.
Or is Arizona part of the Southwest Power Pool?
Not currently, no. But they're part of...
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, commissioners? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item on our study session agenda is the quarterly district performance plan status update. So this is the one where we'll be reporting just changes from the first quarter to the second quarter, the status changes only. And so we'll be rotating through this. And first up, we've got John Stoll.
Good morning, commissioners. John Stoll, managing director of customer utilities. Yes, I'm kicking this off with the first one, which was the customer satisfaction survey that we had scheduled to be completed by the end of the second quarter. And as you recall, a couple of months ago, we had the readout. And so that's been delivered.
And Kirk Hudson, general manager. I've got the second one here, which was to provide an annual strategic plan progress report to the strategy partners by the end of April. And we completed that on April 19th.
Good morning. Brett Bickford, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. I've got the next item, which is our target for hydro capability of 76.9%. After the end of the second quarter, we've calculated that we won't be able to quite meet that. It looks like we'll be about 75.8% at the end of the year, and that's due to additional outage durations that we've had at Rocky Reach and Rock Island, doing our C1 to C7 bushing replacements and our rehabilitation work.
Is that a closer than it's been before, percentage-wise? I mean,
I think it has. Yeah, and we've been making great progress. We ended 2021 at 72.1.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. That's helpful. Good.
The next one is related to our C11 disassembly. We had targeted to complete the disassembly by the end of the year, and due to some of those additional outage durations that we've had, it looks like that work will get started, but it won't be completed by year end. I also have the next one, which is related to completing Unit C6. We did finish that on April 14th, just a couple of weeks after our target date. And that outage took additional time because we had to purchase and install a new operating rod, a new piston nut, and a new Kaplan pipe that wasn't planned for. But we did use some of our strategies on having some parts purchased ahead of time that you guys approved so that we were able to more quickly be able to reduce that outage and not make it like 6 month delay like we had on one of the other units. The next item is Unit B7 at Rock Island. And we had targeted completing that at the end of June. We're in the last 2 weeks of commissioning. So we'll be happy to return that pretty quickly. The delay in that was due to thrust bearing components that we received almost 6 months late. We also had some quality issues when it arrived, and luckily we have the crews that have expertise in that, so we were able to make those repairs ourselves as opposed to trying to send it back to the vendor. And again, we're just a couple of weeks from finishing commissioning on that one.
Good morning, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director for District Services. I have the next three items. The first one is regarding 2023 legislative priorities and getting agreement with stakeholders and with the Tri-Commission. So this was earlier in the year marked as caution because we were doing the search for the Governmental Affairs Program Manager. We did successfully recruit for that position, so it's back on track. We will have a Tri-Commission meeting in September, and then we will have one again either in late November or early December, which will focus on legislative matters. So on track there. The next item is provide schedule and budget update to the board regarding Rock Island relicensing. Rock Island relicensing is going well. What we decided to do, however, is just wrap that update into the business planning process. So you'll hear more about the schedule and the budget this fall rather than by June 30th, which was initially contemplated. The final item there, under my name, is provide board with updated schedule and budget for the service center. So as you know, it's a large and complex project. We've had our share of challenges like any project during COVID and during supply chain challenges and other issues. But we are scheduled to move in about this time next year. We are working on a more detailed move-in schedule and understanding how various departments will sequence into the building, and we'll share that as those progress and as we have more finality in terms of specific time frames.
This is Brett Bickford again. I have the next item, which is number 12, to select a community-supported alternative for the Plain Lake Wenatchee resiliency improvements. I'm working with our communications department and stakeholder outreach teams. We've decided we want to make sure we collect all the data that we can through this year's fire season, look at some of the things that we've put into place. So as we go into communicating with the stakeholders, looks like we're going to want to do that after the fire season, so we won't be completely finished probably with the selection. But we are scheduled to meet in October, and then by the end of the year we'll have a recommendation.
Commissioners, John Stoll again. I have the next two. The first one is in relation to improving distribution reliability. We had a goal to spend $2.5 million on underground cable replacements, Through June, we were at 700,000, so we're lagging behind that. Looking ahead, we may be challenged from the standpoint that cable is one of the supply chain issues, and we're prioritizing ensuring we are hooking up new customers with cable as well as responding to the appropriate emergency response and outages. The next one has to do with the two substations. Both of them are lagging behind. When you look at the North Shore, we've had an extended CUP process as well as just getting some easements acquired, but we're on track, and with that one, we'll probably push out the energization by about a month next year, as you've heard.
What's the CUP process?
That is the county...
it's a conditional use permit.
Yeah, conditional use permit.
Thank you.
Running through the county. And on the Bavarian Leavenworth substation, we ran into some cultural issues that we're working through as well.
Sean Smith here. The goal was to implement the public DC fast charging rate as part of the board-approved electric vehicle strategy, and happy to report that's been completed by the June 1st deadline.
John, again, I have the next one. This is in regards to the electric water and wastewater, as well as fiber rate plans. Consistent with the strategic plan, those went into effect in June. So that's completed.
Good morning, Commissioners. Ian Fitzgerald, Chief Technology Officer. This item concerns the cybersecurity maturity model. New standard was put out earlier this year. We reviewed that and we reset our targets. I'll get into a little bit more details on this in the cyber briefing later this afternoon.
Next item is mine. This one is a goal we set for planning purposes for 2023. It's to make a decision on whether we'll participate in the nationwide GridX exercise, cyber and physical security, and it's done predominantly through a planning committee, organizations across the country, and the Energy Information Exchange, EISAC, and happy to report that we did make a decision that we are going to participate, and we're going to participate more so than we ever have in the past. So this would be November of 2023. There'll be a day and a half, 2-day exercise, and we are going to participate as an organization this time. We've participated in the past with different pockets of our organization, but as an entire organization, we're going to participate next year. And then I'd like to introduce with us today is our acting safety director, Jessica Schwab.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Jessica Schwab. I am the interim safety and HPI director, and I'm going to be reporting to you today. So first, I would like to look at our safety meeting attendance. Our goal is 80%, and we got really close at 79.81. We are working and offering more in-person safety meetings right now, so hopefully that will give us a little boost. That's usually a little more fun as well than a video. So next is senior team safety visits. I'm happy to say that we are on track and met our goals for quarter two. Don't lose that momentum, senior team. I know we've had some issues with the SharePoint link, so if anybody needs help, please contact myself or my team members and we can help you out. Also, if anybody is looking for a site visit to do, again, I am more than willing to go out with you or help you find a place to visit. So thank you for your participation with that. I appreciate it. Last but not least, learning teams conducted. So our goal for the year is 10. This is the first time we've put learning teams on here, so that's kind of a big deal. We have completed 3 of them. We already have 1 scheduled for August. One of the challenges we had is getting facilitators to conduct the learning teams. That's a big time commitment from people. So right now, downstairs, we have a 3-day facilitator training going on. And I'm happy to say it's a very full class. So hopefully having more options will help us meet our goal of 10 by the end of the year. So thank you for your time.
Hey, Jessica, can you share how many people you think volunteered to be learning team facilitators? Do you know?
Oh, that's a great question. 20 plus additional employees, and they are throughout the organization. So that's pretty exciting to see. It takes a lot of time. It's not just conducting the learning team, but what do you do with that information afterwards? You need somebody to lead that to the end. So thank you, Kirk. Anything else?
No. Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Hey, Commissioners, Dean Fitzgerald again. The first item, our field workforce management, we are actually gone back on track. We've hired two outside contractors for project management. In addition, we've actually completed hiring our entire technical project management team in this last quarter. So we have the staff and then resources now to start moving some of these large projects through. One item I'd like to bring up is that our contractors brought us a new mechanic or way of doing things that we're calling personas that really get to the depth of our users internally and staff of what they need from technology. So we're applying those new personas now with all of our technology. The next item has to do with the AMI and the outage management or ADMS immigration. Even though we could complete this on time, there's a couple things that are causing me to maybe delay this a little bit. One of them is that we're running into some data entry or data issues with our customers associated with proper transformers in the OMS system, and we don't want to extrapolate that with a lot of AMI data coming in. The second thing is that we are on progress with our AMI project. We are progressing nicely in getting those meters out, but we won't have a lot of them completed this year, so there might not be a lot of value. And the third thing is we're looking to provide a more secure data integration environment that we're putting in later this year. The three of those things really enable this, and we're looking to maybe move this to early next year with our technology roadmap, which is just finally being wrapped up right now in the finalized environment. So while we can complete this, the idea is it may be best for operations to delay it, and we're looking at doing that. The geographic information system item, we did not complete on time. We had our contractor actually lose some resources. Those resources are back on track. We will complete this year. It'll just be completed late. The next item are dealing with the business intelligence and developing some business intelligence data analytics plan. Happy to say that not only are we on time, but we completed this project way ahead of schedule. We have selected a product in the cloud called Snowflake that's allowing us to scale and quick time to market with data analytics. We're in the process right now of integrating this with our AMI system for customer usage data, as well as looking at improving our data analytics on our operations of our distribution system. Both of those, again, are ahead of schedule, and we're looking to sign contracts within the next few weeks here to move forward with these projects.
Good morning, Commissioners. That brings us to the top of page 8. And continuing, and I'm Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial Risk Officer. And continuing with the business intelligence theme that Ian was just highlighting, you know, there's kind of three parts to our program here: data, tools, and people and culture. Ian just updated you on the data piece, and the tools and people and culture piece, we are lagging behind our schedule on both of those. And we had a resource that was, we were seeking a backfill position for about a year and a half. And I'm happy to report now that we have been able to fill that position. The resource started in July and has already proven to be a talented addition to our team. So while we are lagging on our Q2 completion date for the plan itself, our updated target is to complete the plan by Q3 and then execute the related portions that relate to Q4. So we are lagging, but we have the good news that we have the resources in place and expect to catch up over time on that.
Good morning, Commissioners. Bob Shane, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. I have the next one. It's our fiber customer portal replacement. We have had some challenges along the way. A number of things. There's a change in project management ownership. We lost our project manager on it back in April, so we lost some time there. It's pretty technical, and we also have a lot of involvement between the district's IT and the vendor, in this case ETI and fiber. And so there's a lot of work being done, a lot of coordination, but it is something pretty innovative, and it's having its challenges. We still feel comfortable we'll have it up in service by the end of this year.
Sean Smith here, Managing Director of Energy Resources, on the Stehekin Battery System contract, completed if approved by the board. We actually came to the board earlier with the information and was decided not to move forward at that time. It should be noted, however, we're looking at different options, and we're going out to Stehekin at the end of the month to discuss the various options.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioners. This is Justin Erickson again. I've got the next couple. First one up is concerns for the Riverfront Park master plan implementation and our effort under PPB to support that in conjunction with the City of Wenatchee. We had a goal of reaching 90% design by the end of the year. We're only going to be at about 30% design. It took a little longer to kick this effort off this year and to negotiate the scope with the contractor. But part of it was also good news in that we got some funding from the port and have kind of expanded the partnership between the PUD and the city to also include the port to help with some of the environmental work associated with the old landfill along the park to ensure that whatever we design can be constructed and provide long-term value. So we will be at about 30% by the end of the year. Still hoping to start at least some elements of construction for some phases of that first effort in 2023. Second one is evaluate proposals, complete negotiations for purchase and sale on the Fifth Street redevelopment effort. This, as you know, has been a topic of conversation in the last two or three commission meetings, and Dan Frazier's done an excellent job updating you on the time frame. So you might remember at the last meeting that time frame for evaluation and negotiations is likely to go into late this year and into early 2023. So we'll be a little bit behind, but I think that's not particularly surprising, given the complexity of the redevelopment proposals and the quality of the submittals that we have in place.
And Commissioners, John Stoll again. I have the last one. This pertains to the completing the Dryden wastewater improvements per the 22 project plan. We put that as a caution. Some of the things we're concerned about are supply chain challenges, potential bid environment, although anecdotally I did hear we do have some folks who are asking questions about it, and it looks like, you know, as the bid goes out, we should have some folks putting in for it. So, but again, just a caution there.
I'll go ahead and wrap us up here. Just in summary, I'd like to look at the summary statistics down at the bottom. So we've got 83 tracked items. 51% of those are on track. We've got approximately 17% have been completed on schedule. 1.2% completed after the deadline, and approximately 70% of them have been completed or are on track. Any questions on any of those items?
Well, this is maybe an overarching question that Kelly alluded to a little bit on some of our lagging. we've been having a gap in our employee openings. We have a number of openings that have not been filled for quite some time. Is that gap narrowing now, or is it staying the same, or is it getting wider?
You know, what we found is it depends on the specialty we're looking for, the skill set we're looking for. In some cases, we can hire people on pretty quickly, and then there's others that, you know, if we can't attract locally, it is taking longer, significantly longer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a challenge with all of these metrics.
Yep.
Having the right people in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and it's one of those things we're looking at for the business planning process too, especially where we have individual employees that we're counting on for a lot, and then we might not have the necessary backup or resiliency in place to, you know, if they leave, then take over. And so we have key positions where we don't have that covered as well as we could. Yeah.
Okay, any other comments or questions?
Yep. Yeah, is that okay?
We're going to I'm going to adjust the agenda right now a little bit for time's sake. Bob, if you don't mind, I'm going to put you off till after 8 and 9 have been completed, and we'll see how we do before lunch, and that might go into the afternoon or start this afternoon. Okay, thank you. So at this time, let's bring up Felicity, and let's talk about public power benefit.
Good morning. It's nice to see you all in person.
Nice to see you.
So anchoring back to why we have this program, I'm Felicity Saberhagen, business manager, and anchoring back to why we have this program, it was started in the 2015 through 2019 strategic planning process and was reaffirmed that we wanted to continue it through the 2024 planning cycle. And the board went ahead and approved $6 million per year to fund the program. And this is all by resolution. And this is all assuming that our financials can support that. Our financials have supported it through this planning cycle and continue to support that through 2023. From the 2022 funding cycle, we have already allocated $5.3 million and still have $700,000 remaining. So we'll talk about some alternatives to allocate that remaining $700,000 today. And for 2023, we would be looking again at that $6 million that has been approved by resolution. And again, our first priority is to fund the fiber expansion program, which has been, if we continue on that path, that's about $2 million for this calendar year, assuming that the current plan stays as it is. Which still leaves quite a bit to fund next year, and I'm really excited that we have that much to be able to still fund within our community. We've started an open solicitation process, too. So for 2022, we've received 23 requests so far. They've been spread throughout the county and cover a number of topical areas. So we have electrification, environment, our fiber program, job readiness, and others, and as well as our parks program. And you can see we have received some participation from most areas, most cities within our county, and some of our requests are really truly countywide. Looking at the 23 submissions we had, we were able to evaluate those 23 submissions at the end of June. That's what we had received at that point in time. And we looked at, we took a team of two commissioners and four staff leadership. Looking at our criteria, we looked at the best for the most for the longest, our cost, the complexity of the project itself, project management. Do we need resources internally, or is it funded throughout the rest of the county or the other constituents that made the request? Our resource availability and timeline to completion helped us slot whether or not we wanted to look at that for a current year or a future year. Getting to the fun part, the recommended projects for funding that through this process, there are seven of them that we've come up with so far. The first one is with the Wenatchee Valley Museum and Cultural Center. There's a little area called Coyote Corner that targets six and under. The idea is an exhibit that would promote hydro and STEM and would dovetail nicely with our Discovery Center. Our staff at the Discovery Center has agreed to work with the content and ensure that it is appropriate and provides the value that we would like to see out of that project. That's a $460,000 project. Our second project is our supported employment project. That's been going on for the last several years. We've had great success partnering with some of the local communities that assist with the cognitive disabilities and would like to continue that program. It got a little off track during COVID, as everything else did, but we felt like, so we have had only two participants that have gone through the program so far. We'd like to continue opening that up and making it available for others. The $140,000 will fund approximately 5 years. So we have typically two on staff at the same time, and then they work about 20 hours per week, which allows us to fund this through a five-year window. The third one we'd like to fund with 2022 funding is Chelan Parks Master Plan. And this is specifically targeted at the ball fields that are located kind of near the waste treatment center. And Chelan would like, the city of Chelan would like to pursue making that more of a community park as opposed to just being focused on ball fields. So they would like to fund a master plan in order to do that. We're putting in $100,000 and the city of Chelan is contributing an additional $10,000 to complete that work for this calendar year. As I mentioned earlier, the fiber program is expansion program would continue with the $2 million to fund additional sites and additional locations. This next one is sports courts at Walla Walla Point Park. And many of you have heard that pickleball, I think Rachel let me know that it's a big dill. I got a laugh out of that as well. But in looking at that, what we have, the sports court here is not necessarily directly pickleball court. At this point, what we're doing is looking at our field, at our courts, and they've been multi-use over the years. So if you've noticed at Walla Walla Park, the basketball hoops are lined up alongside the tennis courts, and this has created some user conflicts at points in time. So what the intent of this project is to move the basketball court out of that so that we can repurpose those and have them solely dedicated to half of the courts right now would be dedicated to tennis and the other half pickleball. Because pickleball is a smaller court, we would be able to put in 6 pickleball courts and keep the 2 tennis courts and then have 2 to 3 half-court basketball courts that are separate outside of this. You'll be hearing a little bit more about that today from Ryan Baker, so I don't want to steal his thunder and give you a bit more on it. But just know that there's more coming, and it's really exciting to me for the pickleball community. I think they will be very happy with their big deal. Let's see. The Lake Chelan Research Institute. So one of the they had a number of requests that came through this year, and in speaking with them, their highest priority was assessing the near shore water quality degradation, including the nutrient sources and algae growth. The $270,000 that we're recommending will fund them for 3 years, fund a position to be able to do that for $90,000 a year. We'll fund 3 years of their ability to do research on that and help affect that. The next one on the list, the last one that we're proposing or recommending for funding for this next year, is the Jobs Awareness and Readiness Program. We have done quite a bit of this, obviously, at the Discovery Center in years past, but this is extending that program and looking at secondary schools and trying to generate some more interest in utility-based careers and programs and mentoring through this process to help generate community interest. As your discussion just a few minutes ago, recognizing that we've had some real challenges trying to recruit outside of the community, and this is also to help develop interest within our local community and have people generate interest within our own utility-based careers here. This still would leave just under $3 million to be funded for other projects. Again, we have an open solicitation, so we would continue expecting more requests to come in. And it also allows us to continue evaluating some of the requests that we already have. Some of them may need refinement or may come back, and some of the recipients have potential recipients may want to research and or may want to hone in their requests a little bit so that we can accommodate them a little bit better. We do have, of course, the requirement that it has to meet our statute. We have to statutorily, and Eric can help me with this one because I always...
Authority and nexus.
Thank
we
you.
Have authority and nexus. Authority to do it and a nexus to our operations. Thanks, Felicity.
Thanks. I was
Felicity's covering me the next couple of days in some meetings while I'm moving my child back to school, so I owe her that one at least.
Thank you. So with that $3 million, we would be able to fund things. So we would be back again, kind of looking at our next steps. We would need to come back in the fall to allocate that remaining $3 million. Again, this is the program is designed to be a use it or lose it, so we would want to allocate that by the end of the year. So you can expect us back in fall with additional recommendations for projects. Additionally, a couple of the projects We would be looking today for a head nod from you to go ahead and move forward with them. The projects that are slated for 2023, we would include in our business planning, but there were a couple of them that are in 2022 that we would need to move forward with some contracts to get those in place. They are under the $500,000 threshold and can be done within delegated authority, but would be looking at you to go ahead and give us a head nod that you'd like to move forward with that. And with that, I would like to ask, open it up for any questions.
Commissioners, so just like to mention, it was Gary and myself that participated with that group, enjoyed studying and evaluating those proposals, and became very familiar with that. Gary, do you have any comments on that? You're on mute.
Thank you. I guess it helped to take that off. I thought it went really well. I was very pleased with how things worked on that. I did have one question for Felicity, though. And Felicity, this has to do with the sports court. Is Walla Walla also having some additional pickleball courts constructed, or is this them?
So the sport court itself will, we're creating another court that would have 2 to 3 half-court basketball courts available for play, and 2 of the 4 tennis courts would be converted into pickleball courts. So what we'll end up with for courts at Walla Walla will be 6 pickleball courts, 2 tennis ball courts, 2 to 3 basketball courts, and there already are 2 handball courts as well that are located there.
That's great, and I get to see those basketball courts used a lot. So I think this is a good move. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay,
this is Ann.
Yes, Ann.
Steve.
And then I'll go to Dennis.
Okay, actually, I served on that committee, and we reviewed all 23 of the proposals. We actually spent a lot of time on it. Staff was really helpful. They provided us with material, preliminary material to read through. And then actually Eric was helpful in that it took some time to help us understand exactly what, it means to have a nexus to our project. So we really ironed that out. And so it was a really, fun and worthwhile, time spent trying to determine which submittals would actually fit within that nexus and that were appropriate. So thanks for all the help on this. I'm looking forward to working on this again. Thanks.
Thanks for the correction, Anna. too many groups going on. So thank you. Appreciate that.
Well, that's okay. I just kind of wanted to make some comments. I know Phil Long is in the meeting.
Right.
If anybody's interested, he could explain a few more details about the Lakeshore Research Institute.
So I think at this point, we'll go ahead and open it up for public comment on any of these. And if you'd like to come up, Phil.
Phil, speak?
On your way up, I'm going to have Dennis speak. I forgot.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, Felicity, you and the committee, as I went through these, I thought the diversity of projects speaks well to the needs of the community and much appreciated. Just a little side note, grandfather bias. We had dinner at our son's house last night, and our granddaughter, who's an eighth grader, I shared with her the potential of a jobs awareness. And the antennas of that young lady went straight up. And she is vitally interested in what might be available to her in her future. And I don't think that's an uncommon reaction. And so, again, looking at the list from the water quality issues at Lake Chelan to adolescents' awareness of who and what they may become, Just the variety is excellent, and nice work. Just really appreciate it. And honestly, what a privilege this organization has to reinvest $6 million in the betterment of our greater communities. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you.
Phil, would you like to address us? State your name and your address, please.
Yeah, Phil Long. I'm from Chelan. And I represent the Lake Chelan Research Institute, and I'd like to just mainly thank the PUD staff, Felicity and Justin in particular, for their help in this process, and to the commissioners for even considering having a water quality program as part of the public power benefit. It's really great to be in this position. And so I thought I'd just give you a little background on Lake Chelan Research Institute. So Mike Caputa at the county and I hatched this idea in my living room back in 2016. That was after we realized that we had literally gone 9 years in Lake Chelan with essentially zero water quality measurements. Kind of hard to get the trends when you don't have any data. So we've done well since then. Our goal was to make sure going forward that we always had ongoing monitoring. We continue to monitor, supported by a coalition of local agencies for the most part, City of Chelan, PUDs included, the Rec District, the Cascadia Conservation District, the county. Those agencies have really stepped up, and they keep us going at about 50K a year for this very base level monitoring that we're doing. So the thumbnail sketch of that, if you look at our report from 2021, we did a State of the Lake report after about 5 years of monitoring. And the good news is that if you go to the middle of the lake, say halfway between the state park and Willow Point Park, and you look at the water quality in 2019, 2018, you can't really tell the difference between that water quality and what it was in 1987. So this is really good news. What it says is that the nutrient loading to the bulk of the lake is very, very stable. In fact, we're shocked with our oxygen measurements at a depth of 100 meters in the Wapato Basin, incredibly stable over the time frame that we've got data for. So we're continuing to do that. We want to know something about the year-to-year variation of that. We're probably going to see some differences this year than we've seen in the past. But the not so good news is, and you look at the same report, the anecdotal evidence is that increases in the growth of periphyton, or the attached green algae, are continuing and increasing in the lower basin, in particular in the Wapato Basin, where the most development is. So maybe not unexpected, but the key question is, what does this portend for the lake as a whole? Does this presage a worsening of the bulk of the lake? We hope not, but we don't know the answer to that, and we don't actually quite know the cause. We have some ideas about what's going on and why you might see additional growth of sometimes these strings of this green algae that are locally more intense than in other areas. And that's what the project is about, to try to find out what's going on, what can we do about it. In some cases, it may be just the waterfront homeowner who's aware of this, not being aware that they need to decrease the amount of fertilizer they put on their lawn that's adjacent to the lake. And another thing we do that's interesting on Lake Chelan, we have waterfront locations, parks, as well as private homeowners. And what do? We plant grass. This is like a smorgasbord for the ducks and geese, the geese in particular. And so while in the state of Washington you can't buy a lawn fertilizer that has phosphorus in it, by attracting the geese to your lawn, that essentially makes the phosphorus addition for you. And so this is the kind of things that we want to work on and understand what's going on. So thank you very much for doing this. And I'll just wrap this by saying that I have a picture of my mom and her brother, age 4 and 5, 1922. It could have actually been taken on this date 100 years ago. And they are playing in Lakeside Park in the water. You can see Deer Mountain in the background. It's a great photograph. We want to be able to look ahead. ahead 100 years and say that people age 4 and 5 can play in Lakeside Park and have the same quality of water. So that's our goal. Our tagline for Lake Chelan Research Institute is Clear Into the Future. And, of course, we have the Keep It Blue program, Lake Chelan. So thank you very much.
So, Bill, before you leave, you know, we have a recording. We have people listening, and probably a lot of people that are listening don't know who Phil Long is. A brief snippet of where you've come from. You grew up in Chelan, but you left for a while.
Yeah, actually, I grew up in East Wenatchee.
Oh.
So I'm just a kid from East Wenatchee that happens to have a great career in geology. So I have a bachelor's degree from University of Washington in geology and PhD from Stanford in geology, and I've been on a steep learning curve ever since. I spent most of my career actually looking at subsurface microbiology for the Department of Energy through a couple of different national labs, Pacific Northwest National Lab in Richland and Lawrence Berkeley National Lab in Berkeley, California. So it's been a great ride. I had a stint Central Washington University, where I was a professor, and discovered that there was another way to make a living than, you know, being a professor, and that worked out really well. So at this point, I'm back in Chelan. We've lived there for 25 years now, and so we've watched things happen on the lake. And most of that time, I was working, wasn't paying attention. Now in retirement, I volunteer my time for Lake Chelan Research Institute. So we want to, this is not going to work forever, so part of this effort, and thanks again for considering funding this, because we need to transition Lake Chelan Research Institute into a fully funded organization. So the backstory there is, if you look at Flathead Lake Biological Station, they started in 1899, so they got a bit of a head start, but their 2017 budget was $5 million. So we got a ways to go to catch up, but we will get there with your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
I just wanted to add, just connecting a couple of dots here, you might recall. So 2016, Phil talked about the Lake Chelan Research Institute. 2018, we started the Hydropower Research Institute, and Phil was one of the individuals we consulted with prior to starting the Hydropower Research Institute because of his background and experience. Really helpful. Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Felicity.
Thank you.
Oh, Felicity, I'm sorry. Let me come back to this. So you're looking for a head nod from us on those. So commissioners, do we have some head nods here on the selection? Okay. And Ann, I can't see your head. And are you still there? She may have dropped off. So anyway, you have a head.
I'm here.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure we had all the head nods recorded. We're in agreement. Is that correct, Ann?
Yes.
Okay. Very good.
Yes.
Thank you very much for being there. And I know you're supposed to be absent, but thanks for getting back on. So, Felicity, you have a head nod and continue moving forward.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you. All right. And let's go into item number 9 with Michelle Smith, Confluence Parkway.
Good morning, Commissioners. Michelle Smith, Director of Hydro Licensing. I'm here, as I am in most of the board meetings lately, to give you an update on Confluence Parkway, the city's proposed roadway alignment that will be adjacent to Confluence State Park, and our ongoing involvement with their NEPA process as we look at impacts to the park and the Haran Natural Area. So today, in particular, I wanted to give you two updates, one on the city's schedule for the NEPA process, and then secondly, an update on the Category A justification paper that we are authoring to help support, hopefully, a federal highway designation of Category A for the Haran area. So I'll start with that. We have a good draft of that work done. I don't have a copy for you today, but I hope to, in the next board meeting, have a draft for you to be looking at, maybe even in final format. But we're going through an initial internal draft that we've started. This is really important as we're continuing to look at the wildlife habitat, the cultural aspects, and just the user experience in the Horan area. We feel that Category A designation is really important for the Horan area. What that does is it gives Federal Highway the ability to see that area as an area that's important to protect for serenity and quiet. So noise has been a major factor for us in trying to look at all the impacts of this roadway going in. We've had a lot of comments on the noise impacts. Horan area has been studied. It's relatively low. It's way down in the threshold of noise decibels, and so we're trying to protect that and keep it that way. So a lot of the mitigation that's being proposed is continuing to protect not only the trail area that's adjacent to the roadway, but also that Horan area. So this Category A memo that we're putting together is now with our external consultants, who are experts, have a transportation expert. They are reviewing it for us, helping us get that finalized, and then we'll have some more internal review, and we should be ready to bring it back to you in the next board meeting. So we're making good progress on that. We have a meeting actually today, later today, this afternoon, with Federal Highway, DOT, and the city for an update on the Confluence Parkway project. So I hope to get more information on the schedule at that point. But what I understand right now is that the city is still hoping to get the environmental assessment out for public comment and for a public meeting later this fall. And they're still working with the fishery agencies to get all the information they need to start the biological assessment for an ESA biological opinion. And they're also still working with the tribes on the cultural assessments through the Section 106 process. So those are also still ongoing processes that we're involved with kind of peripherally, but not in aspects of the NEPA, since this is really a Federal Highway, DOT, and city NEPA process. So that's the update I have today, and I don't know if there's any questions. I'm happy to answer any.
Great. Thank you very much for that update. Commissioner Dennis.
Yes. Michelle, do we have any feedback yet from Lon Pope representing our expertise in terms of the latest sound study and his opinion, or the department's opinion, on the animal population?
We do. We Vaughn has been very important through this process, actually, for the last 6 months, and has been involved in a lot of our meetings as we've been talking about that. So that's a great question to ask. Vaughn's interpretation of the noise study is that it's very accurate. He thinks it accurately reflects the impacts to the natural environment. He suggests in his memo back to us on those impacts is that a lot of times the animal populations will adapt. So he said, as an example, when you're driving along major highways, you'll see eagles, you know, nesting in trees right adjacent to the roadway. So he said, you know, it's probably more likely that the animals will adapt faster than the humans will to the impacts of this roadway. With that said, though, you know, the Audubon Society, the fishery agencies, the tribes, there are comments out there right now about the importance of protecting and preserving that area. It's very unique. It has been quiet in that area for a long time, so we're trying to make sure that this roadway and the impacts of this roadway, that as much of the noise impacts and structural impacts as possible will be mitigated for, including a lot of the vegetation that will that they'll have to take out to get the new bridge in, right? So if you look over there right now, I happen to be driving over the Wenatchee Avenue Bridge this weekend, and I noticed all that those trees and that are between the railroad and the pedestrian trail. If you think about where that new bridge is going to go, a lot of that vegetation will be taken out. So U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in particular has already commented that they want that replaced. So they are working, the city has asked for our engagement, including Vaughn Pope, in trying to figure out where the best location for revegetation will be. So I'm really glad that they're asking for our help, and we'll be able to include Vaughn in that work as well.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Again, Michelle, thanks for the ongoing updates on our due diligence for Confluence Parkway.
You're welcome. I just want to say I've just started playing pickleball, and it is fun.
Bob, why don't you come on up and let's get started on your presentation, and it may go into the afternoon.
Rebecca, would you please advance those for me as I go through this? The slides, or I guess I got right here.
Yeah.
I might just start and introduce this topic. This is more than a one session topic, so mm-hmm. We will be coming back. There's a lot to this one, and so we wanted to get started today just bringing everybody up to speed on where we're at with the fiber build-out. So you'll see a lot of numbers and updates and here today, and then our plan is that we would come back, assuming we know the direction that we want to go, we come back with a plan to try and get things where we want them. So with that, I'll let Bob kick it off. Feel free to ask questions anywhere along the way.
Good morning, Commissioners. Bob Shane, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. We'll start with a quick overview of why we're here. First of all, I'm proud to be part of such a wonderful program of bringing broadband here to Chelan County, most specifically recently the public power benefit and how it's advanced really an outstanding fiber system to the customer owners here in Chelan County. Today we've added over 5,000 new premises to our system. We have an overall take rate of 45%. I'll get into this a little bit more. And along the way, we've taken steps to improve our safety posture related to how we construct and how we manage our assets. So there's some extra added value things we've done along the way that were not really part of the program, but certainly have been beneficial to us. We are seeing a challenge in meeting the overall expectations, and I wanted to take this time to go through it and talk about what those challenges are, but also talk about some of the things we've done to get us back on track. So I'll start with a very high-level program update, get into some of the program adjustments we've made, but we will be seeking some feedback and guidance on some of the next steps. Going back to the very beginning, so you might recall $25 million was identified to build fiber out to 9,256 premises. That was, at that time, resulted in 87% of our county coverage. We also identified the remaining 10-15% would be something that we'd look at some other solution set, alternative wireless. One of the things we talked about was outside the scope. The program was expected to be completed by the end of 2026. The year of 2027 would be just finishing up the connections related to what we've accomplished. Since then, we've accelerated the fiber expansion portion of it. Using contracted services to help advance that build-out. We've added $2 million to the budget to get there. And during that time, it established what I called a time frame goal of 5,800 premises. And so let me slow down there a little bit. Between 20 and 24, we agreed to do the acceleration, which was around 1,200 premises. But we also didn't want to lose focus on the infill work, which is the other work that's related. So we combined the two and said, in that window to keep the priority high for both of those, we would try to get 5,800 premises in that time frame of 2024. So that was included the expansion, acceleration, and also the infill. And I think a key thing here is we provided this to our customers at no additional cost. So if it's within the scope of the program, we would bring the service drop to the home and install the OMT to provide service to those customers. So at this point here, more specifically, precisely, we're at 5,240 premises added since the beginning of the project. Our forecast now looks to be about a total of 10,500 roughly. When we look forward and forecasting what that might be. That's 1,200 additional premises over our original target. That's not all necessarily growth. As we did the build-out, you might remember we talked about FDTs or fiber distribution towers. There are clusters of homes that premises that we moved around. They all had different numbers, and so depending on how you moved around, the numbers would change a little bit. So that's part of that 1,200, and also there's some growth in there. But at this point, we're at 76% of our target for the overall program. County coverage is at 79%. Remember, our goal is 87%. The take rate, again, that's what customers are taking after we provide the service. It's at 45% for the PPB program, Public Power Benefit Program. Overall, our system's at 55%, so we have a little ways to go. But in our forecast, we expected our target of 40% on the PPB, so we've actually exceeded that target. It tends to grow over time. It takes about 3 years before we see it mature to a stable point. So the program, as it progresses, we'll see that take rate continue to grow. So right now, it's $24.9 million. We spent $11.5 and allocated to towers. That just means we have assigned funding for the towers for the future builds of $20.7 million. So this one here is where we are as of the end of July. And the two colors represent what we've achieved. The blue, the red is what's remaining. So the different areas there, you can see how that's distributed differently. I won't go through each of those, but Wenatchee basically says there's a lot of work to be done in infill, not so much expansion. But then you looked at something like ENIAT, we have some expansion work in there, and the majority of the work remaining is the expansion work and less on the infill. And you have combinations of that throughout the different areas of the county. To date, this is a quick overview of where we have completed. So 2016 through 2022, we've completed all of those areas. These are all expansion, large expansion areas. 23 and beyond, we have the remaining fiber acceleration, which includes areas of ENIAT, the middle section, Blewett Pass, and portions of South Shore Chelan. And in 2024, a continuation of areas in the Lake Chelan area. So the remaining areas are something that we are very comfortable that we'll get those completed within this time frame that we have come back to the board and negotiated. That was 2024. So I want to slow down a little bit. The expansion is on track to be completed by 2024, assuming everything remains as is, material availability, resource availability. So we've made some changes along the way. Some of them were because it was the right thing to do. So we're better in alignment with the National Electric Safety Code for pole attachments. What we did prior was it was fine, but we felt there was an opportunity to make it even better in terms of safety. So we want to basically improve our safety posture. And in the process of doing that, we wanted to standardize in how we did some construction. So there was some added value here that we've added. We implemented the pole attachment program, so better asset management of our systems and customer utilities. And with that, there was some make-ready work that we had to complete. Up to recent, we spent about $1.8 million to bring the poles up into compliance that the fiber attached to. That is not part of the PPB program. That's something that was funded by the fiber program. And a greater awareness of property rights, meaning we're taking the time to go out and make sure we have the proper easements in place before we attach fiber. There was at one time an assumption if we had electrical easement, we had the fiber easement. That has not always been the case, and so we're making sure that we're in compliance with that. There are some customers that are not particularly wanting to have fiber passed over their homes or their property to enable the full PPP program to reach its full capacity. Very few and far between, but we have had some issues with some customers where they simply were not interested. And in doing that, we have to do a redesign or possibly abandon those few customers downstream from that connection point. But we continue to work through that. So achieving the county coverage target, in the beginning we had mentioned that we had 9,200 premises that we identified, and that resulted in a county coverage of about 87%. The growth is higher than we had expected, and it's everywhere. And the reason everywhere is important because depending where that growth is, if it's within our current footprint or where we have fiber, there's a tendency to be able to absorb it without any additional construction. If it's out of our territory, then it's new build, and it becomes part of the PPP program. We've seen broadband demand continue to grow. COVID was a prime example of how that was really a necessity and how we got a lot of kudos for having that out there, but we're not where we need to be completely. There's been a large developments in the area, and the reason that's important to us is as part of our desire to hit the county coverage. So as the county grows, we want to get those customers connected. There's also a real-time response needed, meaning when these buildings get completed, they get occupied, and folks want fiber pretty darn quick, or broadband, and we like to be there to provide them over our network. It tends to be the most cost-effective in the sense that the contractor has already put a substantial amount of conduit in place and vault system, so it becomes really cost-effective for us. But it does take PPP funding to get there. We also see supply chain issues on the rise. It's beginning to be a material. We've had instances where we couldn't put the conduit and vault systems in completely because of shortage of supplies. We had to go back and do some rework. But that's becoming a bigger problem as materials become a bigger issue with shortages. We already see that the fiber and some of the associated hardware is 2 to 3 times longer than expected in the delivery time. And that seems to be growing as we go forward. There are pockets of fiber that's out there, and we're trying to secure that as quickly as we can, but there's a potential that as we go forward, the fiber will become a significant material shortage for us. And there's also just overall, in supporting the changes we made, the make-ready work, the pole attachment, and keeping with NESC compliance, it has put a larger workload on the customer utility and the fiber group to get that work completed. So that's something that, even though we've implemented those changes for the right reasons, that it's also impacting our ability to get work done because it does draw on resources. Some of this we know, the increased impact of fiber operations. If you will recall, we mixed the fiber with the electrical to get the most efficiency, but in that also causes some challenges for both work groups. If there's an outage and it's electrical problem, it could damage the fiber, or we have to pull fiber out and reinstall it. So even though it's overall added efficiency, it does require additional work when we do maintenance. Ultimately, this is increasing demand on the customer utilities. And then on top of that, the growth that they're having to deal with in terms of substation developments, infrastructure builds, new loads, they're all great things, but they also put a demand on the very resource that we rely on, the fiber group, to get work completed. And then things outside that, listed there, there are a number of things we're trying to accomplish. Again, they do drive resource needs, and in that it becomes a priority within the fiber and the utility side to get the work completed. That first bullet there is a little confusing, but let me just talk about it. When we look at where we're going to build, we know areas are going to be more difficult than other areas, and we try to match those in such a way that we get the highest level of constructability. So we might mix in some relatively easier areas with more difficult areas so that every year we get our targets. We do that to the extent possible, but we have a fixed number of areas, and so after a while it becomes a problem. And you don't want to do all the easy stuff first because then you just have a heck of a workload coming up. So we try to mix and match that.
So, Bob, as we've looked at challenges and moving into program adjustments, help me with timings. We're at the end of our morning session. Help me with how much more time you need. And
I
want to be able to give us some discussion with commissioners at 1 p.m.
Thank you.
Good afternoon and welcome to the August 15th, 2022 business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District. Commission meeting. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand either physically or electronically that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. We will have a public comment time for those items not on the agenda. Remind me of that too, would you?
Yep.
All right, so we are, we took a recess intermission with Bob, and we're going to continue talking about challenges and program adjustments for the future. So thanks, Bob, for being here. And
you're welcome. Again, Bob Shane, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom, picking up the rest of the presentation. So we briefly talked about the constructability, basically trying to normalize the amount of work in any given 1 year to be more successful by mixing easier build with more difficult build. We also did a reorganization of the communication linemen and the customer service engineers, pulled them from the fiber group and moved them into customer utilities. And the reason for that was hopefully gain tighter integration between those resource work resources, better communications, better collaboration in order to meet the objective. So we've been doing that for a little over a year now, and we're still seeing improvements in that area. We'll continue to see some as we go forward. But basically trying to leverage the policies and procedures that they had in place for many, many years, providing electrical services here in the county. So we thought we could leverage that. We also increased the number of CSEs, customer service engineers, to help that resource by adding 1.5 full-time employees in that role. There's also ongoing, but we increased the communications and collaborations between all the business units. This is a big project, a lot of effort, and there's a lot of stakeholders involved, so we wanted to make sure that we were doing the best we could to make sure folks were informed to help in the planning, so specifically real estate services, trying to get them involved much earlier in the process so they could do their important work. We've included some engineering project management to help overall program management. And again, as I mentioned before, quite a bit improvements in the planning and scheduling of the work between the both the fiber and the customer utility electrical systems. I'll slow down a little bit as we get to these slides. I think these are really important. So here's a snapshot of what we've completed in the PPB. The blue line there is our targets for each of those years. You're very much aware that we have had challenges in meeting those annual commitments. At this point, we're at 76% of our targets, and we do see an increasing challenge, and it's important to us that we complete what we committed to completing. So anything we didn't do the year prior, we add it to the next year or the following years to make sure that we are always meeting that obligation. And in doing that, the next slide will show you what's happened. So this is not really obtainable in terms of resource loading, but we are showing for demonstration purposes that that work we did not complete in 16 through 22 basically gets shifted into the remaining years of the project, and you'll see what I call a bow wave of work, because again, we're committed to complete what we said we were going to do, added to what we're our annual forecast going forward. We see this bow wave of work that we have to recognize that's going to be very difficult to accomplish unless we do something different. And going down the same path would suggest not a successful outcome, and that's why we're coming to the board here. Again, we'll continue to make every effort to meet our commitments, both in scope, schedule, and budget. We've delivered a lot to our customer owners. We want to make sure that we maintain that, and so our conversation here is how we think we can get there. One of the things I would like to talk about is the percent county coverage. We understand that we set an expectation of 87% in the very beginning of the program. That was based around 9,200, roughly, subscribers. We're always chasing that. We the county grows, and that means our commitment increases in terms of bringing fiber to those customers. And depending how quickly that continues to grow, it can continue to be a challenge for us to catch that as we go forward. In our original program, we assumed about a 1% growth And we knew some of that growth would be within the existing footprint of our fiber that we already had in place, so we could simply absorb it. We perceive that that's actually happening now, but we also see there's more growth than we had ever anticipated. Very large developments coming together, and in that, it's taken a lot of resources to get there. Again, our goal is to maximize the county coverage with the $27 million that we've been authorized to spend. We are seeking some feedback now, and for two things I'm going to do is provide some barriers that we think are in place that are causing us some real issues, and also I'd like to go over four different options or scenarios that we have considered in terms of how this PPP program might be administered going forward. But we are seeking feedback. There's no recommendation here. This table here outlines essentially four options or scenarios we had considered. The original set in 2015, the vertical column there, that's the scope of what we originally defined. 9,256 premises, $25 million, hitting 85-90% of the county by the end of 2026. A consideration or scenario number one is basically hold to the original premises pass, that is 9,256. Keep within that target, but you'll see that in our estimates it's going to cost a little bit more money, $27 million to get there. We would come up short on our target for coverage. Be somewhere down around 80-81%, and we also think there'd be an extension in time, and this is with no additional labor resources. Option two is keeping the county coverage commitment, that is at 85-90%. That brings us to the 10,457 that we're estimating now, also an increase in cost to get there, but again the added premises would push us out into the 2031 time frames roughly. And that is, again, no commitment or no additional resources added to that one. Option three, again, the same. We're looking at keeping the schedule but adding additional resources. So, again, the $10,457 is our target. The cost we don't have yet, and we'll have to get back to you on that, and I'll explain that a little bit more. Keep with the remaining 80 or the target of 85-90% and complete by the end of 2026. And
so
then
the only difference there then is just determining the money.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, the other targets are still the same.
Yeah. Slightly higher premises costs or count higher, but the same county coverage in the same time frame. Okay. Then option four is, as I mentioned here in the title, schedule no additional resources. So what could we get done if we just stick with the 2026 commitment? We think we would end up with 8,246 premises. Slightly reduced cost because we would not fulfill the premises pass that we had estimated. And our county coverage, again, would be 78-80%. So that's if we just stopped at 2026. We believe option three, and let me bounce back to it, provides the best benefit. The value is still under investigation. How much would it cost? What impact would it be to all the resources that are required to make this successful? And we're wanting to go back and really understand if we commit to this, can we follow through? So it's not just the cost, it's the resources to do this. Those resources can be internal, but also external resources in the form of maybe support on the design and even support on the construction side of it. So we're still looking at that pretty thoroughly to see what that would be. But we do anticipate an increase in cost in order to meet that objective under that particular scenario or option number three. There is an ask for consideration to eliminate the time frame goal of 5,800 premises. It's not realistic to achieve at this point because we've had so much work that we didn't complete. A key thing is not going to change the number of premises passed under the program. It just removes that time constraint. And I might add in there that includes the commitment on the fiber acceleration as well. We would get that completed, even if we remove that time frame. We're still going to get that done within the 2024 time period that we have committed to on the acceleration portion of it. Also like to talk to you about locking down the premises pass. So right now it's a moving target based on how the county continues to grow. We'd like to make a recommendation that we just agree that it's between 10,000 and 10,500. And when we do that, we're no longer chasing the county coverage. We're just committing to a premises pass. We would continue to maximize our build out based on the amount of funding that's left. So we're not going to just stop when we get to 10,000. If there's funding available and resources available, we would continue to get the most we could here in the county. The county coverage, it could stop, but I don't think that's the case. I think it's going to continue to grow, and we'll never catch it if we don't just agree on a total number of premises that we want to commit to.
So, Bob, if I could pose a question about that, and I'm not sure exactly how to frame the question, but our county is going to continue to grow. If we choose a number, let's say 10,500, and we go out another 5 or even 10 years, and we've grown another 5,000 units, how do those people get fiber?
Oh, that's a great question, and that's a question I have to pose to the board, because at the end of the program, there's no more funding for a capital build. There's a little bit of intrinsic build we could pick up as we go out, just normal as the growth happens within the footprint. We have some funding to do that. There's also the alternative solution that we talked about before, the 10-15% that we would provide services maybe through a wireless type solution. So that 10-15 would grow. And it could come under the umbrella of the alternative solutions, which we don't have that identified yet, being a wireless solution.
But that 10 to 15 could be scattered next door to a neighbor that has fiber.
That's correct. Yep. And so on the edges, we always tried to advance it, but with any scope creep, you continue to do that. You move the fiber one block closer to that customer. The next customer is one block closer, and so you'll chase that all the time. It's very difficult because you can see fiber. Some customers see it right there, but that's the end of the scope of the program as defined for cost and premises pass. And it's a challenge. It's hard to explain to customers, yes, we understand that, but scope creep can run the cost way up if we don't stop someplace.
Right. Clearly understand that.
Yeah.
I also understand the customer one block down is going to want fiber.
One house over,
yeah.
We would look for guidance on the board on how we might want to pick up the remaining incremental amount, whether it's part of the 10-15% we identified as being extremely expensive. There's going to be something in between there where we have stopped the program. It's incremental growth, and it's probably not really in the same category in terms of cost for the 10-15%, something that's in between. We don't have any funding right now within the program to build it. To accomplish that. But you are absolutely right, Commissioner. The minute we stop building and the county continues to grow, we'll have a segment of the community that will not have access to the fiber, potentially.
As it's currently designed.
Right.
Yeah. As
right.
Currently designed. Yeah. Correct. Last one there. Are there any other options or expectations you'd like to share with staff on something we had not considered? Those are big buckets that we had considered. There's variations or permutations of any of that, but those are the major categories that we could put together that made some type of sense. And option three, again, would be what we would recommend in terms of meeting the original scope, but it will most likely cost more money to do that.
Question that I need to think about. Don't know if I can give you an answer right now.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And our plan is to return to the board with a more development of option three, if that's something you'd like us to pursue, but we can develop a multitude of those options if you saw anything that would seem more reasonable or higher tolerance for. But option three, we think, is one.
Gary? Go ahead, Gary.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Can we put that slide back up that gave the options, please?
Is that one there, Gary?
I'm not seeing it on my tablet.
Hmm. We're working on it.
Shows.
It is showing on the virtual.
Yeah, I see it.
You might have lost your internet connection momentarily or something, or your screen might have frozen.
I'm going to go from memory. There was an option that said was option number two that said the cost would be $27 million. We'd push the date out to 2031, and the percentage was still 85 to 90, I think.
Yep.
I guess the question I would have for you, since that $27,000 was the same across the board with one exception, which is option two.
Three.
Was that by pushing the completion date out further into the future, wouldn't the cost increase as a result of spreading it out over more years, just your labor cost, your inflationary pressures on the materials cost?
It's a great
question. Wouldn't that number, the 27, be higher?
It's a great question, and it's these are not fully developed. And but here's the rationale behind that. As we build out the county and there's county growth and it comes in terms of subdivisions and developments like that, the cost to serve those is considerably less than what it is for the expansion or the traditional infill. So we're expecting or anticipating that growth over that period of time would be more cost-effective areas. And so we think we can get more bang for the buck in terms of premises passed. But we're just assuming that. The county growth could be considerably higher in areas outside of our current footprint where we'd have to add a lot of infrastructure. But so far we're seeing that developments in the cities, and those costs are really magnitudes less to serve those than it is for the more traditional ones. So a fair number of that $10,457 is considered to be part of what we would see in growth, and that growth would be a lesser expense. And again, we're speculating. This is not a deep science in any of these, but these are really just the high-level perspective as to what it might turn out to be.
But I guess for me it would help at our next conversation to really dive into that number on option two, because what we're, in my mind, what we're looking at is adding 5 years to the build out. And if the cost is less, there's the trade off between throwing more money at it to try to achieve a goal quicker. So I'd really like to see that flushed out a little bit more.
Certainly.
And then the other question, I had a second question, Bob, and this had to do with a comment you'd made that some customers are not willing to allow fiber across their what would normally be an easement. Are you getting any feedback as to why?
We do. Some simply aren't giving really good excuses. I'll give you one example. We have a location where the spouse, one of the two spouses, had no issues, signed it, and then the other spouse tore it up and said not interested. We have a lot of collaborations with those folks who are just not willing. They don't see the value. They're not necessarily and see how it's anything that they particularly want. Others have tried to make in such a way there is a benefit to them directly, and so there have been some compensation on dollar amounts, what was very reasonable to make it happen. So those are accommodating customers. They just have some expectations. Others we simply can't get a hold of. We have made repeated requests. They're either out of the area, out of the country, and it's very difficult to get a hold of them to have confirmation that they're willing to sign the lease or the easements. Commissioner, it's not a huge problem. It's just when it becomes an issue, it takes some efforts to get there. And if we can't, then there are some customers in our county that simply are not going to get service. In this particular case, what I was talking about, the spouse one and spouse two, I think there are six potential residents downstream from them that will not receive the fiber. Now, reality, there could be local pressure on folks to think otherwise, but that's not our role. So we're hoping that community involvement will help those folks. And so in our design, we always try to anticipate what might happen so we don't purposely design them out. We keep it in there so that should there be a awakening moment at a later date where they see the value, then it's a relatively small uplift for us to get that design completed and constructed.
Commissioners.
I'm really curious.
Sorry, Commissioner.
Go ahead, Eric.
Oh, I was just going to say, this is a real it is a real problem because we have very few options short of eminent domain, exercising that, and it does sometimes result in redesign. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it get to a place that we actually go work somewhere else because we can see there's not benefit to continuing the conversation. But it is a real challenge for Bob's team and John's team.
I can appreciate the challenge. I'm more interested in the logic and if there's a is there a uniform, you know, if we discover a uniform reason why people would say no, you know, whether, yeah, for instance, if somebody says no at that price, or if somebody says I don't like XYZ, so no, it seems to me to be an odd response to not permit fiber, even if you personally don't want it, but people downstream are prohibited from getting it. It just seems odd to me that somebody would say no. And I guess that's the reason I'm curious as to what the reasons are.
It's a mystery to us as well. It's a public benefit, all value, but not everybody is necessarily sees it that way. We do a lot of outreach, yeah, to those folks to try to demonstrate the value and benefit of doing this. Multiple times we'll go out and speak with them. We'll have different folks speak to them with a different tone, different approach, and we do our darndest to get there. But there are some people, for whatever reason they might have, I don't think a systemic problem. I don't hear the same story coming up over and over. It's can't get a hold of them, or they simply are unreasonable, or they have their own particular reasons why, and they've shared with us, but it's not necessarily anything that we can combat or come back and alter that.
So help me review the staff recommendation of option number 3. What that does for us is it increases the premises passed. Funding is to be determined. We don't know that at this point. The county coverage and the program end date remains at the same goal that was set in 2015. So what we would be looking for, and maybe even go back a further in the slides on the recommendation there, so where's the slide?
It's the one after that, Bob, after the two.
There we go.
Yeah.
Or let's see. Yeah. So to me, I'm trying to keep this balance. And I know you just don't throw money at something and say, that's going to fix it, because it doesn't take into account staffing limitations and resources and all of that. But I think it's very clear to me, since I've been here, this is one of the number one, when people complain to me about something, this is what they need. We've had COVID, and we realize that as people work and go to school at home, et cetera, there's definitely a need to provide the service. So the need is high, and as we balance off the benefit of some good financial years, seems to me we should be able to add funding to help support meeting needs when we have the benefit of financial health. And what I'm hearing, or what I think I'm hearing, is then coming back to commission and saying, okay, so if we want to increase the number of premises, and we want to keep our time for with time frames set, then we're going to have to increase, this is what we're going to have to increase in funding and resources, et cetera, and we're going to be waiting to hear from you the ideas and options on how to do that. Am I hearing you?
That is exactly right.
Am I summarizing that staff summary so far?
So when we talk about option three, just expand on that a little bit. To demonstrate what I'm trying to accomplish and bring it to extremes just to help. Right now, heavy dependency on custom utilities to do the design work and the construction work. We know that's a challenge. They have priorities in other areas as well. So what I'm trying to propose here is how do we, and I'll use the word decouple, mm-hmm. the fiber program burden from custom utility to the extent possible, but leverage everything we can to make it most effective and efficient. And doing that, we're going to have to hire some resources external, contract external resources for the design work to some extent, for the telecom and make-ready work, and some construction capability. So they're focused on the program more so than they would be under the custom utility umbrella, where they have all those different functions and responsibilities they have. So it's a way to set out some decoupling so that there's a dedicated resource on that, but we know those resources are expensive. We know that they're also difficult to get, so there's some uncertainty if we propose this, what's the availability of resources for this? I've reached out to multiple construction companies that think they have the resources to do it. Grant County has one right now. I've met with them, and they said, you know, give us a go. We can build this out. So there's some indication the resources are there, but because it's external, it will cost more money. So that's basically the design work for both the electrical and the fiber, and then the construction. And then over that umbrella is project management, field inspections, all those different things that just add a lot of resources that custom utility is stretched on right now. So we're trying to decouple to the extent that we can with a focus on meeting the PPB expectations with a dedicated set of resources, in a nutshell.
Well, for me personally, I would like to say, to give the head nod to say, go talk to people, find out what you need to do, and let's keep moving. We can't keep expecting to do this with limited resources. It's going to cost us money, and I don't see that the need is decreasing. It's just increasing. And so that's just one commissioner's opinion. I think we need to take the recommendation and say go ahead and come back to us and move in that direction and come back and tell us what you need. That's just my opinion, commissioners.
I'd like to see the numbers. Anyway, I think that's an important part of the calculation
for option three.
Yeah. Because I sit here and I understand you answered part of the question in your response to Commissioner McKenna. I'm the chart you don't have up right now that shows. If we extend it out 5 years, we get the same number passed within our budget. And hiring outside resources does what you're saying. It costs more than if we kept it in-house for the next 5 years and did it. I'm just wondering how much you're talking. Doesn't seem like it would necessarily need to be that big of a number. I don't know.
That's we have a wide range right now of what that might be.
I bet you do. I bet you do. But the numbers are important.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we agree. We'd want to come back to. I didn't want to come so early. We couldn't prepare you with anything, and there was a challenge there. But we didn't want to do a lot of research if it was something that the commission had no tolerance for. So. Apologize for having better numbers, but we kind of had to know, I think, where you wanted to go so we could do some due diligence.
We're getting far enough down the road now that, the other concern that we'll have to address within the next few years is what do we do with continual growth in Chelan County?
And we've never addressed that.
Right, we haven't.
Yeah, the minute
and this doesn't address it.
No, it does not. The minute we stop construction of new premises fast, we will start to fall behind on county coverage because the county is outgrowing where our footprint is.
Yeah.
Dennis?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Just kind of listening to this whole thing, it seems like to me we're a little bit in a pay me now or pay me later to extend fiber. And so what I'm going to just meander through a little bit is if we utilize dot crews and increase our installations and completed, you know, the 85, let's say, let's just round off 90% level, and we did that sooner than later, the cost, which I'd like to see, you know, maybe they would be relatively the same, just whether we do it now or we spread it over time. Second piece of perhaps my faulty logic is I've never had a person email me or text me and say, you know, please be aware of the cost of expanding fiber. They have always said, I want my fiber and I want it now. And no one has ever mentioned what it's going to cost. So to our customer base that doesn't have fiber, delaying this, well, not delaying it, spreading it out over time doesn't seem reasonable, you know, to them. If I have it, I'm pretty happy. If I don't have it, I want it, and I don't care what it costs to do it. The other thing is, at some point, I think there's two issues. One, we're going to hit a point where installation basically almost comes to a stop just simply because of terrain and other, you know, items. At that point, if we've hired dot crews, they're not our own. And along that logic, then, I think two things we have to address is the bigger the system, the greater the internal maintenance is going to be over time to service it, to infill, to do those kinds of things. The second piece of that, is as we contemplate growth, and I'm not seeing it necessarily slowing down, we're going to have to maintain a certain size of crew just to maintain growth and interest. And there's no one who's going to buy a new house in Chelan County that doesn't want to have fiber at the doorstep when they buy or build. And so just some thoughts, meandering thoughts, considerations, and if we could put some numbers to those, you know, you might run the risk of making me happy. You know, so I appreciate you listening to me.
Ann, did I hear you? Are you on the line?
Just yes.
I think I'll hear you, and then I'll go to Gary.
Okay. Question for Bob. So, Bob, in all your predictions, your numbers, you know, your cost, has the presence of Ziply, the new, well, I guess they're not that new provider in town of fiber, has that been factored in? And can you factor it in? Hard to do, I know.
It's a great question. So we have, as I shared with you before, we have worked with some of these incumbent telephone and providers in the Valley to see if we couldn't partner in any way to leverage their infrastructure, their funding, and with what we do here. I've met with two of the major providers here in the county, the incumbents, and we were not able to come to any particular alignment. Their business models are substantially different than what we have here at Chelan PUD. We promote a public access system for providers to use. They have closed access systems. But we're still looking to find some type of common ground, but we have not reached that at this point. In terms of their presence here, they are building in the area. They are expanding their networks. the two incumbents I'm referring to are the larger ones. There's activity all throughout the county where they're bringing additional infrastructure to support their network, but they're not at a point where they're of any particular real challenge for us at this point, but we don't know their business plans specifically. They could overbuild us in a heartbeat if that's what they choose to do. But I think because we have such a powerful system with a lot of community support with our service providers, I think it's a real challenge for them to crack that nut. So I think if we continue to do what we're doing now and provide such a world-class solution to all of our customer owners, I think at best there will be a provider in the valley, but not necessarily a material provider. That's just my perspective on that.
I guess I don't understand what your last comment meant. A provider, but not a material provider, not a substantial. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So in Chelan County, we have Charter, Spectrum, we have Ziply, and we have various wireless providers that are trying to get the Chelan County customers for broadband. When I talk to the providers, Chelan PUD's fiber system by far is superior and has the lion's share of those customer owners here in Chelan County. Those other ones are they're productive or they're successful in areas that we are not at. But most areas that we are at, we have the lion's share of those customers. To imply and that those providers will continue to build out as a provider for broadband in Chelan County, but they're not providing any real competition for us at this point. They are just a provider in the valley.
They are, and they do focus or most of their effort goes toward the high-density areas, correct? So they could try to peel those away from us with lowering their price or undercutting us somewhat. But anyway, it's a concern of mine. I know it's hard to know where it's going to go or how to factor it all in. But I don't know. I just think it's worth maybe a little more discussion another time.
Okay. Maybe.
Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Gary?
Thank you, Steve. I'm not sure how to frame this question, and so maybe, Kirk, you might be able to help me with this. But I recall a commission meeting some years ago when we were talking about all of the operating units and that the goal and objective of the operating units would be that they would be self-sustainable at a certain point in the future. And of course, fiber was on that list. And the goal at that time was to get the infrastructure in place, and then the revenues generated from the sale of the fiber network would sustain not only the network, but also future growth. And so as I'm listening today, I'm hearing maybe something different than what I was operating under for the future of our fiber department. So am I recalling this properly?
I think you're recalling it properly, Commissioner Arsenault. I think what we're sharing today is some of the numbers we're working with are now different. So I think what you're recalling is accurate. It's now we're 2.5 years into this 5-year period, and we're recognizing that, okay, this might not work out the way we thought it would in terms of the number of premises passed and the cost and the time frames. And so I think what you're, if I might take a stab at your question, I think you're asking, does this jeopardize potentially the long-term self-sustainability of the fiber program? I think that's something we need to look at.
Well, I think it kind of goes hand in hand with the decision that we're discussing today, particularly if we're the ultimate question is going to be, are we going to be increasing the funding to hit that 85 to 90% of the county? And so if that's going to be the next question, I think we should also have on our radar screen if it's going to cost us to supplement the fiber department going forward for any future growth within the county think I might like to know the answer to that. It seems like the two of them are tied together.
I think that's accurate.
So I will, if I can add to that. I'm sorry, Commissioner.
No, go ahead, Bob.
So I was going to say, we do have an operation expense ratio that's a target of 0.8, meaning that from that model, we would be self-sustaining in terms of operation and maintenance of the network. Any growth beyond what was in our footprint would have to be something that was subsidized by the PD, the board, to build that out. But our model right now says that we would be self-sustaining in terms of operating the network and maintaining it day-to-day operations with the revenues we get as we build out. The PPP is important because that's part of that revenue for us. So we really want to hit that target. But in terms of capital growth, meaning expansion in the footprint, that was not part of what we had estimated we would be able to take care of under our own funding.
Maybe I could take a stab at summarizing.
Mm-hmm. Please do.
So I think what we're hearing loud and clear is, and just to summarize kind of why we came here today, is that we didn't want to get too far down the path, halfway through the strategic planning process and recognize that we've got some challenges ahead of us to try and hit what we established originally as the target. So we didn't want to go any further without at least raising that awareness for you all. And then while we still have time, wanted to tee up the option of if we want to get as close as we can to that target, should we spend time doing that if it costed more money? And what I'm hearing today is we'd like to look at that option. And I will say even option three has me somewhat concerned just from the standpoint of in order for us to, even if we came back and said it would cost us much money, we're going to have 3 consecutive years that are better than anything we've ever done in order to get as close as we can to that target. So that right now will be a challenge.
Better that being, financially or better?
No, expansion? just resource-wise. Oh, okay. Being able to go by that many premises in that period of time is going to be a challenge. Not to say that it couldn't be done, but it will be a steep challenge. I think what we should do is come back and share with you what we think it would take to get as close as we can to that target in the time frame we originally established, and also make sure we have the long-term view of the sustainability of the metrics, the financial metrics of the business going forward. I think the other thing is that we need to be thinking past the 2026 time frame. If let's just say we knocked it out of the park. We hit everything we wanted to hit once we asked for additional resources. We still haven't addressed the growth issue beyond that 2026 time frame. So I think we'd come back with those 3 or 4 elements, and we'd shoot for trying to do this in the business planning process that we have over the next 3 months so that we would have something represented in the budget if we chose to go down this path on option 3 for next year.
Okay. Commissioners, any other comments or questions? Gary?
Thank you. Kirk, something, I guess I need clarity on what you were just saying. Were you suggesting then that we, on the long-term basis after 2026, we would look at that fiber being able to position itself in a way that it could earn enough revenue off of its sale of fiber products to take into account future growth? Is that what I understood you to say?
Well, what I was trying to articulate was that we would make sure that we had a good handle on what the self-sustainability criteria is for the fiber program going forward and incorporate what it would look like if we wanted to keep up with growth, which may mean some of those criteria that we were talking about would have to change if we were going to keep up with growth. So we'd look at it from both perspectives.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you for your input and your time.
Thanks, Bob.
At this point, I'm going to go back to item 10 on our agenda and open this up for public comment. Was there anybody from the public that would like to address the Board of Commissioners on any item on the agenda or not on the agenda? Are you seeing anything? Okay. All right. So at this point, hearing none, seeing none, we are going to move to our consent agenda. Commissioners, do I have a motion to approve our consent agenda, which includes resolution number 13?
I would move approval of the consent agenda.
Do I have a second?
I second.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor of approving the consent agenda signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Consent agenda passes. Let's go ahead and move into resolution number 14.
Okay. Resolution 14 is a resolution authorizing the general manager to enter into an interlocal agreement, SA 22-12343, with the City of Wenatchee for the McKittrick Street interchange and extension. With us is Lance Spire and Andy Wendell.
Thanks, Kirk. Good afternoon, Board of Commissioners and all. So before I dive into the nuts and bolts of the interlocal agreement, Rebecca has a little graphic pulled up that shows the area of interest here. So what we're looking at is installing a 600-amp electrical system from this southwest corner of McKittrick and North Wenatchee Ave as part of the city's extension project. And I believe North Columbia Street is the alley behind Save Mart. So entering into this interlocal agreement with the city, it's really been a collaborative effort. It allows us to bring one contractor in one time under their project. They're facilitating the bid and construction package. We're approving any changes and payments made to that contractor, but it's really been a collaboration in the design, and we'll continue to be that way in the execution when we go to construction. So the resolution itself allows us to enter into an interlocal agreement with the city with not to exceed amount of $475,000. We came up with in conjunction with the city, a two-thirds, one-thirds cost-sharing mechanism just based on the capacity that the city needs to serve future developments and our desire and recommendation to install a 600-amp system. So the city for future development requires 200 amps of capacity. We recommend 600 amp of capacity just based on the ability to move power around in the area and the reliability factor. So that's the summary of the interlocal. Did I miss anything, Andy?
I think that's good. It's crossing Wenatchee Avenue.
Yeah. With
underground power system. It's a big deal. We don't get to do it very often. Coordination with the city and the state DOT. Work has to be done after hours, you know, late at night, early in the morning. It's a lot of money.
Complete side project. Does the state still own that property?
State does not. The property that just, I guess it would be a little bit east and south is the washed up property. The city has acquired that and is developing that property.
Okay.
What they refer to as the North Columbia, as Lance alluded to, it's kind of goes from Holly Street south behind Save Mart. Is that Save Mart? Yeah. South behind Save Mart down to the DOT property. That'll be the new North Columbia Street. That'll go through there. This road here, the McKittrick intersection will be extended and, of course, intersect with that. And then off to the right or further east in the future, McKittrick Street would be extended over to North Miller Street, kind of over there by Bluebird and that intersection. So
there's another street on the west side of the tracks. That's
correct.
North Columbia. Right.
Yep. I think the plan as it exists today is to continue McKittrick Street underneath the tracks and connect over there with Miller Street. And this power system that Lance is referring to will help move power from the North Wenatchee and the Walla Walla Street area up into the western Wenatchee area as well. So it's a big tie for us. It would be very advantageous. In addition, that North Columbia city's development will need power as well. And that's where that two-third, one-third allocation comes in.
Commissioners, any? Dennis.
Yeah, I have a question. We run 600 amps across from Wenatchee Avenue over, and then north and south it goes to 200 amps. North and south on Wenatchee Avenue is 600 amps. Why do we reduce it by 400 amps?
That's a good question, Commissioner Boltz. So we're future-proofing that corridor in there. Right now, the city only needs approximately 200 amps worth of power to develop out North Columbia Street. But that additional 400 amps, that will be used to connect those other substations as they continue to push McKittrick Street further east. That's where the benefit of that tie will come in the future. So we anticipate that in the next 5 to 10 year horizon, based on what the city's signaling us for that development.
Following up on that, so will the wire and the conduit accept a 400 or 600 amp service later without it having to be changed out?
If I understand the question right, can we put a 200 amp system in now and then recable it to a 600 amp system in the future? Is that what you're asking?
No, what I'm saying is, why don't we cable it for the larger size now and anticipating it growing rather than going back at some point and doing the whole job over again to increase the size of the wire?
Yeah, I understand the question now. So in essence, that's what we're doing. We're putting the 600 amp circuit crossing Wenatchee Avenue as it's shown, and then the future needs for North Columbia, we project that to only be 200 amps along North Columbia. So we're putting in the right cable size for today and in the future. So there
okay.
Will be a reconductor. Does that
all
make
right,
sense?
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a way.
Okay, other questions? Commissioners, I will take a motion on that.
We'll
want to do all three?
Yeah, we can do all three.
Okay.
Unless there's any concern.
Okay, let's do all three of them then.
Okay.
Thanks, Lance and Andy.
Agenda item number 15 is a resolution approving bid advertisement award and contract execution for North Shore Lake Chelan Substation Construction Project bid number 22-12367 and approving a capital budget revision for the project. With us is Gary Rice. You might recall Gary's been back here a few times with equipment purchases, and now this is the construction contract for the North Shore Substation.
Yes, I'm Gary Rice in the Engineering Project Management Department, and I'm also the project manager on the North Shore Lake Chelan Substation project. And this resolution is for bid 22-12367. It's for the North Shore Lake Chelan Substation construction project. It's a resolution authorizing bid advertisement for construction of that contract in an amount greater than $3 million, it's estimated, and also award of the construction contract and then also an overall budget revision for the entire project. I'll run through here real quick the scope, purpose, and also a little bit on the budget revision. The scope of bid 22-12367 is to complete all civil works, foundations, equipments, and structures installations that Kirk mentioned, electrical and grounding, bus work, site landscaping, irrigation, fencing, paved accesses, and site restoration for the new substation. It's the complete construction contract for the substation. The purpose of the North Shore Lakeland substation is to support long-term growth and enhance electrical reliability in the Chelan and Manson areas. Bidding of the work is anticipated for October and November of 2022, and major construction is expected to initiate in March 2023, with energization in late fall 2023. Regarding the budget revision, due to realized equipment and material contract price escalations and anticipated construction cost escalations related to economic and supply chain factors affecting the current bidding environment, district staff recommends a capital budget increase of $2,671,000 for a total project capital cost of $9,382,419. Increased cost of the power transformers, switchgear equipment, steel structures, and anticipated increases in the construction costs are all major contributors for the need for the budget revision. Are there any other questions I could answer?
Okay, any other questions for Gary? All right. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. Agenda item 16 is a resolution authorizing the general manager to enter into the first amendment to the February 1st, 2006 power sales agreement with Puget Sound Energy. And with us is Janet Jaspers. Janet was here at the last meeting introducing this topic and back with the resolution.
Thank you, Kirk. Janet Jaspers, Director of Energy Planning and Trading. And just a quick recap, I was here August 1st with the presentation. In 2006, Chelan and Puget entered into the power sales agreement, 25% share of Rocky Beach Rock Island. At that time, we knew environmental attributes were going to have a future value, but that was 16 years ago, and we didn't know what it was. So we're back now amending or asking to amend the contract. Actually, the environmental attributes have a lot more value now. We have the Clean Energy Transformation Act, CETA, which began January 1st of this year. We have the Climate Commitment Act, which starts January next year. And so this has really been the result of a pretty lengthy negotiation, kind of started, stopped, started. I wanted to thank the contract team that worked with me, Charles Von Reese from Legal, Rob Davis, Legal, Jane Mitchell, Middle Office, Sean Smith, Mike Bradshaw, and myself from Energy Planning Trade. So a bigger team worked on this than just myself. We are splitting the value 50-50 between us. Pricing is kind of competitive. And this is the payments would be in addition to the cost of production that Puget is currently paying. And we're going to start January, or payments for energy generated starting January 1st of this year. Create some RECs, transfer them to Puget, a tracking system, and get paid starting January 1st of this year. So I'd open it up to any questions.
Just a comment that this dates me because I was newly elected on the commission when we entered into that agreement. So, wow, 16 years flies.
It dates me too because I was on a contract.
Okay, any other questions for Janet? Thank you, Janet.
Thank you.
Okay, commissioners, I have three resolutions, 14, 15, and 16. Do I have a motion for approval?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept resolutions 14, 15, and 16 as presented.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you, Gary.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, let's move forward with the vote. All those in approval signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? All right. Motion passes. Manager items.
I've got three of them. I'll just start with the first one being a reminder that the quarterly project summaries were in your board packet. Those came from Felicity, so just ask us if, or feel free to pass along any questions you have along the way there. And then I'd like to invite Ryan Baker and Travis Tucker up to talk about pickleball again.
Thanks, Rebecca. All right. Good afternoon, commissioners. Ryan Baker, Parks Manager in the Parks Department. Along with me is Travis Tucker, our construction manager for this project. I wanted to start out by a couple of thank yous, mainly to you folks for allowing us to negotiate the bid. As you recall, last time we were here, it was over the engineer's 15%. So Travis is going to get into that detail in a second, but thanks for that ability to do that. Thanks to Travis and his great job at negotiating. Quite tough and took us a couple months to get there, but for the second year, I think you're going to see some action here that he'll share with you shortly. And then lastly, the Wenatchee Valley Pickleball Club, a huge, huge stakeholder in this. I probably talk to them, I'm not kidding you, once a day for the last couple of weeks here, just making sure we have the lines the right color, make sure the nets are you know, the right height and the right brand that function correctly. So into that type of detail. And I got to tell you, I've really learned some terminology that I didn't realize that I use at my own home during the summer with my kids, and that is stay out of the kitchen. Apparently that's a big thing in pickleball. So with that, I'll turn it over to Travis to kind of talk about some good news that's happening as early as today.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan. Thank you, board. So I was able to successfully negotiate with a single contractor. I had several online that were interested, but however, only one step forward and was able to give us a good price for Walla Walla. And that was really the park that the pickleball club wanted to focus on. So they are starting today. You'll see them out there pressure washing the courts, sealing the cracks, and getting started. So excited to get this one off the books, maybe get some of the pickleball folks to stop calling Ryan. And I'm sure he's given them my number at this point. So. So for $228,000, that's the contract price to get Walla Walla Point Park completed. We have the rest of the parks on the docket for 2023, so look forward to getting those projects done next week.
Awesome. Thanks, Travis. I'm hoping to get into a little bit more detail about not only what we're doing today and the next couple of weeks here, but what we're going to be doing into the future. And so, you know, as far as part of that work starting, I would say, you know, as a maybe member of the public, or why are you doing that work in the middle of the summer when we're trying to play? Well, this was their first availability, and again, the success with negotiating. So we realize the timing's not great, but we've been letting folks know why we're doing that, and just wanted to give you a heads up in case you had any comments. The other kind of wondering about what takes so long. I didn't realize that it takes 28 days for concrete to cure. So they'll be closed a little bit longer than we would hope for, but it'll be set up nice and ready for play here at the end of September. So as part of this project, and you heard a little bit from Felicity this morning about the PPB request for basketball hoops, we actually have to remove two of the four hoops on the south end. There's a conflict where the posts are set with the existing basketball hoops. So thanks for approving that this morning and giving us the ability to add those hoops back for our basketball folks out there. As I mentioned, we're going to be separating the tennis, pickleball, and basketball courts. This is expected to decrease the user conflict that we're seeing currently, but it is actually anticipated that it will generate more pickleball use and potential conflict with pickleball and scheduling out there. So just wanted to give you a heads up on what we're thinking about is to use our current policy that that's in place. It's first come, first serve. We're not scheduling at this time. But we have taken some proactive steps, which included signage out there,
For players, limits court time. So if you're playing singles, we ask that you limit it to an hour. And if you're in doubles, it's an hour and a half. And so far, that's been working pretty good on the tennis side of things. As I mentioned, staff's already began putting together management strategies should we encounter more user conflict. This could include scheduling or even reserving a portion of the courts. We do that for special events. It would be an example for the city of Wenatchee if they're having a tennis camp or a pickleball camp out there. But we really don't want to get into scheduling pickleball, as you can imagine, with as much use. Would take quite a few resources to do that. So we're hoping folks will abide by the signage and everybody gets along and plays pickleball out there. Moving forward, 2023, we've moved everything that we thought we were going to get done this year. You may recall we talked about Kirby Billingsley, Confluence State Park, and some work up in Chelan. Again, with cost rising, we were able to get the Walla Walla work done, but not quite that work. So we're going to move that out into 2023. In addition to that, planned prior to moving this work, a full redo of Daroga Park, State Park courts, as well as BB courts, and that's done through our normal asset management process. So I could probably spend about 5 minutes going how many courts and where, but I'll just summarize that what kind of has happened with our sport courts is we've removed a portion of the tennis, about half, and repurposed that for pickleball. So all said and done, if things go well and we get good bids next year, we could be at the total of 17 pickleball courts, and we're sure hoping that's going to help the demand that we're hearing. So with that, welcome any questions that anybody might have.
Well, the positive by not doing all of that at one time is it gives us the opportunity to do part of it, look at the use and get the feedback that we need. And so I don't necessarily see that as a negative challenge, not getting them all done at one time.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. That was part of our signage, and we were worried about closing these down in the summer. Is we do have alternatives, right? We can't allow them to go use other local courts, Confluence, down at Kirby Billingsley. So I agree with you, Commissioner, that's helpful when we have other options available.
Ryan, can you show me up there the basketball hoops, what got moved and what's coming back and where it's going? I didn't quite follow all that.
Yeah, so the picture that you have in front of you, if you were to go to the east or the right-hand side of that shot, you can actually see right on the courts that don't have the blue overlay. Oh, yeah. Oh, Rebecca's got her mouse on it right there. You kind of see the hoops. They're right there on the corner. So one, and there's another one. So those are the two hoops that will be removed, Commissioner. The two hoops on the tennis court side will remain at this time. Pointing to those, thank you. And we're hoping to, with the approval of this morning of the PPB, look outside of that footprint and have anywhere from 2 to 3 dedicated basketball hoops. I think it was a good idea at the time when we built these parks. We included a lot of the use and cut those costs by having them all in one place. But as we become more popular and we're just seeing more use, it's a conflict we're seeing. So, yeah.
Great. Thank you.
You bet.
Commissioners, other questions for these guys? Gary.
Ryan, great job. I just want to comment and give actually all staff a really big thank you for the work and the efforts that they're doing on this. You know, it's frustrating to the basketball guys when people are playing tennis, and then vice versa. When people are playing tennis, it's frustrating to the for basketball. So having specialized locations for the folks to go, you're right on target. We are, as a community, we're growing. Our population is getting bigger, and our parks are being used more frequently. So excellent timing. And I'll tell you what, all those pickleball courts that you were looking at, they're going to keep you out of the kitchen. So that's good.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. Not seeing any other questions for Travis or Ryan. Perfect. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Next item.
Yeah, Brett Bickford, who's going to give us an update on naming of the new substation that would be serving Microsoft. And by no means done, but we wanted to at least bring forward one of the leading candidate names and see if you had any concerns with that. Brett.
Good afternoon. Brett Bickford, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. As we proceed with design and planning for that new facility, we realize we need to come up with a name pretty quickly so that we can help make sure all of our documents and other things are not needing to be changed later on as we move down the road. So using some of our HPI principles, we've thought about we've established some criteria and come up with a number of different names. So some of those criteria are, how can we associate that with, you know, a geographic feature in the county that's easy for people to know, where is it? Is it in Chelan? Is it in Leavenworth? Is it, no, it's, you know, south of Malaga. It's going to be located right below a known geographic feature there called Jump Off Ridge. Yes. I didn't say the name yet, did I?
No.
No, Andy would know.
You were scooped.
You know, something that's easy to say.
Came in my mind as soon as you walked up there.
You know, that's easy for dispatchers and system ops and, you know, folks working in the field. Easy to say on the radio to communicate, both written and orally. Also, something that's not already a name. And so, you know, some people were gravitating to, well, let's call it Malaga something or Microsoft something. But we already have facilities with Malaga in them, as well as we didn't want to necessarily associate it with a corporate name because that might change over time. And so using some of those principles, kind of the leading contender is Jump Off Ridge, or maybe just Jump Off. But that's the name that we're thinking about now, and we're soliciting input from employees and staff, and we'd appreciate your input as well.
Commissioners, we've heard from Randy. Anybody else?
Hey, Brett, I have to say, you've got 100% of my support. I think it's a great name. I love it.
All right. Thank you.
All right. I'm not seeing or hearing any more comments.
Well, we'll come back if it...
Got a smile there from Dennis, so does that give you
okay.
Some information?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, if it ends up changing, we'll come back. We just wanted to see if there were any concerns out there.
Yeah, I didn't hear or see any concerns there.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brett. That's all I've got.
Okay. Commission items. Do we have any? Are we taking care of travel? We do that at the beginning of the month, so we're fine there. Commissioners, do we have any commission items to share?
I just like to comment. It's really great, once again, to be back in person and see a room semi-filled with people. Mm-hmm. It really makes a huge difference to this meeting.
Very good. Thank you, Randy. One last check. Don't see any hands up. All right. Follow up on delegation of action items from previous board meeting.
So from the last board meeting, we had a couple items to update you on. Rebecca did add the environmental attributes, carbon credits, and resource adequacy to the next board workshop agenda. That was completed on the same day as the board meeting. And then Rebecca will coordinate tours with Commissioners Congdon and Arsenault when the timing is appropriate.
Very good.
And we didn't capture any new ones today, other than we'll come back during the business planning process with the fiber research and options.
Okay. And is Ann with us still? Okay, so I
I do not see her. No.
Bear with me just for a minute. All right. So we will move into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigations to which the district or its board is likely to become a party, and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 42.30.110, and to consider information regarding the infrastructure and security of computer telecommunications networks, security and service recovery plans, security risk assessments, security test results to the extent that they identify specific system vulnerabilities pursuant to RCW 42.30.110, to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause the likelihood of decreased price. We will be in executive session for 2 hours. Did I miss anything? Okay. All right. So we are in recess. We're coming out of executive session. No votes were taken. No decisions made. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we stand adjourned.